Welcome aboard, you people. Starship Road Concha. Time for another day. Ending of the week of Broadcast Insults. All right, a lot to get to today. We were, after the show last night, we were talking, the production team and myself, about things that are going to be coming up today on the program. And I said, well, you know, we should always keep an eye on this coronavirus story, because you just never know if there'd be another case that pops in Chicago or that in the United States, let alone Chicago. And one popped here. So I wanted to localize the story, but not this way. Dr. Ngozi Ezike is with us, and you heard her in the news at the top of the hour. She's the director of the Illinois Department of Public Health. And, Doctor, thank you so much for being with us. Let's talk a little bit about what we know here. This is a patient that was in Wuhan province in China in the end of December, beginning of January, came back here and then became symptomatic.
That's correct. The person did travel to Wuhan, and then upon return, after the return, did develop symptoms and did refer herself for medical treatment. And after that evaluation, and in working with the local public health department as well as the state public health department and the CDC, we were able to get specimens that then could confirm the diagnosis. Unfortunately, given us the first case in the state.
Is that patient still hospitalized?
In this case, yes, that is the case. The patient is in stable condition. We usually don't like to get too much into the details of the individual case, just to maintain, you know, their health privacy and their privacy in general. But this patient is in stable condition.
But the patient came back. It was reported earlier today, as a result of that press conference, that patient did come back to Chicago in the middle of January. Right. So they started to get symptomatic. One would imagine a couple of days. Do we know
after their return?
Right. And then how long does it take to be able to test to make sure that this is what you're looking for?
Great. That's a great question. So all testing for this novel coronavirus 2019 has to occur at the CDC. So all specimens, respiratory specimens, blood has to be sent to the CDC in Atlanta where it is run. We're not able to run this in our state lab at this time, but if that becomes a more pressing need, the CDC will be able to help us get that capability here.
Right. All right. So it's one case here. I know in the press conference earlier today, it was made clear that this patient has not been to large public events, limited public transportation, limited access to more than just a few people, I would imagine, around the patient. So are you, as the chief, you know, the director of the Illinois Department of Public Health, the chief health official for the state, what is your level of concern that this could spread here based on this one patient?
Right. So I believe that the risk remains very low for the people here in the state of Illinois. We only have this one confirmed case, and as was reported previously, there are not a lot of close contacts for this patient. So we are continuing to put the word out just in case there are other travelers to that region that have come back and who develop symptoms. We want them to call ahead to their medical provider and then get instructions on how they will seek evaluation.
Is the CDC sending extra assets here to Chicago as you...
Yes.
And what kind of assets do they send in a situation like this?
Yeah, so we have been talking with the CDC just in preparation for over 2 weeks, just as we became aware of the situation in China. We were just in conversation, should something happen in the U.S., should something hit Illinois. So those conversations and the gearing up and the information to our local health department had been ongoing. We actually, once we got this person under investigation. We were accelerated our conversations with the CDC, and actually we do have personnel in terms of actual CDC staff that are already on the ground in Illinois to help us look at this case and learn as much as we can in terms of the transmission and spread and learn all that we can about this novel virus.
Dr. Ezeka, I don't want to be an alarmist about this, but you know, you see the movies that there's logistical support that comes into places when there's concern about pandemics. Obviously, way too early to deal with that here, but that's the sort of preparation that would be the next step if people started to get sick here in the same numbers that you're seeing in Wuhan province or even half of that set of numbers, right? Doctor? All right, well, that's not comforting when that happens.
Uh-oh.
We were just talking about the logistics, because you see that in the movies where they bring in medical tents and things like that, isolation tents, because you have to be prepared. Because when the pandemic, it were a pandemic to hit, and there really hasn't been one of these kinds of pandemics in the United States since the early part of the 20th century and the Spanish flu. But there isn't a... there has to be a certain amount of logistics that surround that, because you see that in the movies, and I know that they do that for real.
We should have listened to the doomsday clock.
I think you're right, Lauren Lapka. Why don't you tell us about the traffic and the weather? We'll pick this up on the other side. When it comes to the weather, we all want to know, what did Skilling say? Watch for the updated forecast from Chicago's most trusted meteorologist, Tom Skilling, weeknights on WGN-TV.
Chicago has been building its public health preparedness systems for years, and we have a solid response plan in place. There is no need for the general public to change their behavior in any way based on this news.
Okay, that's the Chicago Public Health Director from a news conference earlier today after it was revealed that the first coronavirus patient in Chicago, second one for the nation. You had the one in Western Washington State, and now the second for the nation is right here in Chicago. It is a patient that was in the Wuhan province in China, came back here from here. I thought I had heard that they said it was a woman, but I'm not 100% sure of that.
It is a woman.
So there are people who are referring to it as a woman. Okay. So.
And Senator Durbin said earlier that she was in China today to help take care of her elderly father. So that's why she was there from like December to January and then came back, got sick, and now is in the hospital.
Okay. And so now that she has returned, she started to get symptomatic after she got back here. They made the point that at this press conference that she hadn't been to any major public events, wasn't taking public transportation. So the risk, according to public health officials, is very low that she would have communicated this to a great, you know, mass group of people or a number or had contact with a number of people, which is how those things tend to spread. Igor Koralnik is with us. He is a neuroinfectious diseases specialist at Northwestern Medicine. And Dr. Koralnik, thank you so much. Let's talk about the difference between how these kinds of viruses spread, the ones that seem to have just jumped from another species to humans. Why are they more virulent than, say, the flu or other diseases? Or are they just as virulent but just more dangerous because we don't know?
First, thanks for having me. It's a pleasure to be here. So what you said is absolutely correct. The flu is a virus that infects millions of people in the world, and there are actually 400,000 people every year who die from the flu. And so the rate of fatality from flu is about 1%. So it's a very serious epidemic as well. And we have vaccine, and the flu virus varies all the time, and we have to catch up with those different vaccines. In terms of coronaviruses, those viruses cause common cold in most people, but you have epidemics with variants or evolving coronavirus that can cause, like, SARS or MERS, for example. And this is now a novel coronavirus that has never been seen before that seems to have jumped from bats or snakes into humans. And so far, we still don't know exactly what is different in this virus and why it's causing those fatalities. But this is a field in development.
So the fatality rate in China has been about 3% or a little over 3% so far, based on the numbers that we've seen from them, from the Chinese government. So that makes it three times more deadly than the flu, but that's still 3%, right? People are recovering.
I agree.
And recovery in these kinds of situations when you have illnesses like this is really it's the level of care that you're getting from basically sophisticated medical systems. Like they have a pretty sophisticated medical system in China now. We obviously have one here. As long as people are, they have oxygen available to them, if they're having respiratory symptoms and they're properly hydrated, the body can fight these things off better than if they're not.
You're completely correct. So most people who are infected with viruses in general, you know, have no symptoms. Few of them will develop symptoms. In that case, they will have fever, cough, sore throat, shortness of breath, flu-like symptoms, and they can develop pneumonia. And there's no treatment for the virus or the disease. And so the care is supportive, including oxygen, hydration, help with the breathing, and help with the high fever.
Do we know if that's are those the symptoms that they're seeing from this coronavirus in Wuhan and potentially with this patient here in Chicago had?
Yes, so I think that what we know from the patient in Chicago is the patient is mainly asymptomatic, but the patient who developed pneumonia have the symptoms of viral pneumonia that we just discussed. And the rate of fatalities, as you said, have been about 3%, mainly in elderly people.
Right. And that would be the case with the flu, too. When you look at the fatality rates in the flu, it generally is people who are immunocompromised, the elderly, the very young, unfortunately. We had a case of that in Illinois fairly recently. So it's people who, if you're fairly healthy, these viruses, and you're properly hydrated, and if you really start to have trouble breathing, you have to seek professional medical attention. You have to go to a hospital.
Exactly.
And let's talk a little bit about that, about people who are presenting at hospitals. At a moment like this, are the hospitals throughout the Chicago area, everybody obviously is on the lookout for it all over the world now because, you know, last couple of weeks this has emerged. But in Chicago, when somebody comes in with flu-like symptoms, are they going to isolate them?
Probably not. They will ask them where they're coming from. Obviously, did they travel to China recently? Have they been in contact with somebody coming back from China, especially this area of China? And there's no reason to isolate everybody who has a sore throat, fever, or cough, especially, in the cold Chicago weather.
Yeah. And people now are obviously, we're almost at the peak or still at the peak of the flu season right now. Is that how are we in that particular, because that's obviously laying over this fear, and so people are going to start to feel sick and then start to wonder, well, you know, what is it? So the flu season seemed to be peaking a little late. I know there were two strains, the A and the B strain, and the A seems to be emergent late here. The B was the early one. Where are we now, do you know?
I don't have a specific epidemiological data for the flu season, right now in Chicago. I think that it's important to know that people need to get vaccinated for the flu every year. They need to alert their primary care physician or medical provider if they feel sick, especially if they have fever in this setting, and shortness of breath especially. But people should not be unduly worried about getting coronavirus if they have not been in the area of endemicity and if they have not been in contact with somebody traveling back
from
this area.
Right. Eventually, in these kinds of infectious outbreaks, though, that goes away, right? I mean, because eventually, if there were to be, and again, public health officials here in the state of Illinois and the city of Chicago are both saying that they have this patient that has coronavirus is very unlikely to have transmitted it to somebody else, or certainly into a mass group of people, you know, like at a sporting event or stuff like that.
Yeah.
So, but when these things, like right now in Wuhan province in China, it's, you know, you obviously had a patient zero, and then, you know, it sort of spreads out. And if this does become more widespread, it doesn't, they won't be screening for that. They won't be screening for, were you in China or in contact with somebody in China? That would have to be at a point in which hundreds of people would have probably come down with it, right?
You're right, and we're early in this epidemic, but obviously it's good to have all this media attention and people talking about it and people being aware of this, especially in port of entry into China, out of China, in a large airport in the U.S. as well. And I think that, as you said, these epidemics need to be contained by certain forms of quarantine. So I think that there are about 40 million of people in China who are not supposed to leave this area. And the method of screening, both from the CDC standpoint and the Illinois official standpoint, are really adequate. People are really aware of this threat. Mm-hmm. But I don't think that we should be overly worried, especially for citizens of Illinois to be exposed to this new coronavirus and become sick of that.
Okay. Thank you very much, Dr. Igor Korelnik from Northwestern Medicine. Thank you, sir. Appreciate you having you on the show again.
Thank you. My pleasure.
All right. I feel somewhat better. Not quite as freaked out as I was 28 minutes ago. But man, when I woke up this morning and the first thing on my phone was coronavirus in Chicago, one might imagine my reaction to that. Longtime listeners, my friends, my colleagues, the people who spend time with me would know that this is a moment where I literally drew a bath and put my head in it and thought, well, until I really had to breathe. So I was thinking, maybe if I just put my head in the water, I won't be able to get near the disease.
I'm surprised you don't have a mask on right now.
I was going to say, I'm surprised you walked out the door.
I did ask not to walk out the door, but they said I had to come in if I wanted to get paid. So I decided to come in. But if you'll notice, if you're watching this on the cameras, I have a plastic body bag over me right now. And I'm breathing through some other device. I'm kind of like a Batman villain right now. All right. Kevin Powell is out at the Sox convention for us. He'll be reporting from there all day. We'll be talking to him a little bit later on in the program at Sox Fest, which is this year, Kevin, at the McCormick Place, right?
Hello, Ro.
Hello, Kevin.
I am here at Sox Fest 2020. Hundreds of fans lined up to see this year's club. Very exciting.
I would say this is what I like about this is that Kevin is doing this like it's a golf match. We are here at Sox Fest, where hundreds of people are lined up. There is Eloy Jimenez. It's just
where I'm located.
16-foot putt.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. We'll talk about that a little bit later on. All right. Thank you, Kevin. Good checking in with you. sound very happy. Somebody get Kevin a drink. All right. Let's check in now with Kim Gordon. She's got the WGN News. Then Ben Bradley joins us. And the lovely Tracy Butler, America's sweetheart, is going to join us and talk about the weather that's moving into Chicago a little bit later on tonight. Ro Khan Show on 720 WGN. Ben Bradley from the WGN TV newsroom joins us right now on the Super Celebrity Satellite.
How are you doing, Ro?
Oh, I couldn't be better. Don't ask me. I mean, now Ben and I are very similar in a lot of ways.
Hypochondriacs.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And what I thought of immediately was when I woke up this morning, I saw the first thing on my phone. Yeah, you know, you pick up the phone, it's got all those notifications on it.
Yep.
First thing was coronavirus found in Chicago. And then I scrolled up because it was a national story. It was like New York Times or something. So I saw the New York Times and then it was like one of those things where it took like 10 seconds for it to kick in and go, "Oh, coronavirus found in Chicago." What?
Okay, let me talk you down from that. Can I?
Please. We did have the experts on right now, but go ahead, yes.
Well,
Go ahead.
We all know you're not a doctor, but we play one on the radio.
Uh-huh. Go ahead.
800 people have been sickened by this in China. 26 people killed. You know how many people the flu virus killed last year?
Right. I understand.
34,000.
Okay. All right. So the mortality rate, Ben, I'm sorry, but I just want to share this with you. The mortality rate is about 3% right now consistently on this. The mortality rate on the flu is about 1%. So this is three times as deadly. Now, still 3% doesn't mean that this isn't like a 50% or 80% mortality rate like you see in the movies.
Right.
Like that outbreak. But I cannot help but be reminded, Ben Bradley from WGN TV News, I cannot help but be reminded that the movie Outbreak took place in Chicago on the North Shore. Right, they showed like at New Trier, they were putting up these tents so that people could they were
it scarred you, yes.
Yeah, it did. Yeah, and because you see like all of like these Chicago scapes and Chicago suburban scapes and there's Matt Damon running through trying to save people's lives. one of the first fatalities in that movie was the great Bill Leff's wife, Terry Leff.
God rest her soul.
Yeah, no, she's alive. She's okay. Fine. But she's
only actress. Died in the movies.
She is an actress, and she was an intake nurse in the movie, taking in this one person who's like hacking something up, and like, oh no, it's fine. There's no thing. And then next thing you know, it's like the Batman thing. They're at a funeral. Right. You know, it's like, oh, why? That's not good. So those movies, they scare you. So don't watch that movie tonight.
No,
do not watch Outbreak tonight.
Wait for it to all be okay. But do you remember the panic that Ebola caused when there were cases?
Well, we never really had them here.
Well, no, but remember there was talk.
Zika.
SARS, Zika, Ebola, mm-hmm. which were absolutely devastating and in some ways continue to be so to their countries of origin, where they don't have the ability to quickly treat patients. And there was some talk when an American aid worker would contract one of those awful viruses. Well, do we fly them home for treatment, or will there be an outbreak here in the U.S.? And some politicians and political candidates at the time suggested, shutting down flights from Africa and from other places like that.
Shocked to hear that.
Because
But Ebola is not airborne. Ebola doesn't have the same transmission.
There are factors in all these things. Absolutely. My point is, don't panic.
I didn't panic about Ebola. Don't tell me not to panic.
Unless, of course, you're the 60-year-old woman who contracted the coronavirus from Chicago.
Right.
She had been in China caring for her elderly parent and returned home and wasn't feeling well. Went to the doctor, and they immediately, essentially, quarantined her in an isolation room. But her condition is said to be decent. I will say one of our producers had a family emergency and was over at the Northwestern emergency room today, and she said a guy came in and he was all sweaty, and he went right up to the ER desk and said, "I'm sweating, I don't feel great, I've just got back from China, I'm very concerned." And she did say they immediately took that guy in the back.
Thanks for spreading that rumor. That was good, Ben Bradley.
No indication that he has it, but I'm just saying that's the concern. That is out there because of people like you, Rokan.
I know. Well, listen, let me tell you something. When they set up a tent city in Lakeshore Park right next to Northwestern Hospital, then I'm going to be concerned. Because I know, and I asked, it was really funny because we, I don't know if this is funny, but it was, I guess maybe alarming. We had the Illinois Public Health Director.
It's a thin line. Funny, alarming. Very thin line.
It is. The Illinois Public Health Director was on, and I said, hey, what the logistics, like in the movies, do we have that as a CDC, prepared to do, those kinds of tent cities and that kind of isolation and quarantine thing? And then she disappeared on the phone. Right on that question.
I did a training mission with the Illinois National Guard probably a decade or so ago, where they flew us in a Black Hawk helicopter down to a rural area right along the Illinois-Indiana border. And it was for one of these weekend exercises where they activate a lot of the National Guard units from across the state, and they train for this type of thing. And if you saw for yourself the training and the thought that goes into this stuff long before it happens, I think you'd be reassured.
Okay, fine.
Did I reassure you?
No.
My work here is done.
Yeah, no. But I do know that there are training, and she did say, the Illinois public health director did mm-hmm. say that there are more assets from the CDC up here now. So, because they've known about this for a while.
Yep.
Right? So they're just telling us now. So that's, you also wonder what else they know. Like, what do they know about the aliens? What do they know about, huh? What do you think about that?
If you were elected president, Ro, what would be the first question you would ask, the first mystery you would want solved?
I was like, I would ask to see the aliens. You know,
uh-huh.
You know, President Trump did that for sure. I want to see them and I want to put them on TV. All right.
The ratings will be huge.
Ben, what else? I want to be standing there with one of them. The name of my defense secretary. What is coming up in the news at the time?
Well, we are covering the coronavirus here in Chicago. Marcella Raymond will have that story. Also, that lockdown at Naval Station Great Lakes in the northern suburbs today. It was caused by what's known as a gate runner, a guy who goes through the gate in a car without stopping and showing authorization.
Yep.
Turns out it was an employee. I think what's a little more concerning is it took him nearly 2.5 hours to find the person.
Well, why is an employee doing that?
Right. Right.
I mean, that's I don't understand that. All right. Okay.
Lauren Majera's live at Sox Fest. We've got the weekend Dean's List, and President Trump just released the seal for the United States Space Force.
I'm
about to post this. I'm creating a little collage as we speak. It mm-hmm. looks remarkably like the Starfleet Command logo.
Uh-oh.
I mean, remarkably.
Oh, no.
I'm going to finish this up.
Is it Universal? Who's got the... There's going to be a copyright infringement here. I can just feel it. All right.
Gene Roddenberry's estate is going to go after...
It was Universal, I think, has that. Oh, that's going to be a problem. All right. Thank you.
Yep.
All right. There's Ben Bradley. See him in the WGN-TV News at 4, 5, 6, 9, 10, 12, and 14. Here is Lauren Lapka, traffic and weather. Because my coat, this does not seem right. I don't know. Shedding. Gassy, all those things that they say. Tracy Butler is America's sweetheart. You can see her mornings on ABC7 doing the weather. Isn't that correct, Tracy Butler?
That would be correct. Are you broadcasting from your studio in your basement bunker?
You know, it's funny that you should mention that. You're about the 18th person who has either asked me or texted me that question today. Are you going into work now that the coronavirus, there's one patient with a coronavirus in Chicago, and the public health officials are like, this is not going to be, at least based on this one patient, this is not going to be an epidemic here. But that hasn't stopped me from panicking. And you
I wasn't even talking about that. I was talking about the weather.
Oh, sure.
I know how you panic over weather.
Yes. Well, all right, let's talk. Well, that's why we're having you on, because I would like to panic over the weather with you at this very moment. So let's talk about what is coming our way here, because we have a, what is it, upper low? Is that what they call this?
There's an upper level low sitting off to our east, and there's a surface low sitting right over central Illinois as we speak. So we're getting kind of a little bit of a 1-2 punch.
We're double low.
A couple different levels, yes.
We get a double low. When is this upper level low getting out of the way? Because we were told by all the other meteorologists that we've talked to this week, Demetrius Ivory and Rick DeMaio and now you, that these things at the upper level low, it can park for days at a time and just keep this whatever, this like gloomy, maybe it's raining, maybe it's snowing kind of thing going. And now that's supposed to be moving off, right? Isn't that leaving?
It will be leaving, but it's taking its good old sweet time. And here's the thing. We have a saying in meteorology, never turn your back on an upper level low.
Yeah.
You got to keep it close to the vest.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. Rick DeMaio said that too. And all three of you have said that. This week, never turn your back.
True.
And it's like, it's like when you go to the ocean, they go, oh, never turn your back on the ocean, whatever you do. You know, like, okay, I get it. No, the wave will come up. I've seen it a million times. It'll take the children away and the sharks and their dog's eyes. And then it's all over. But this, I don't even know what you people mean when you say that. What does that mean?
Well, here's the thing, because sometimes these systems, they don't have anything to really kick them out. Now, we do see enough to maybe kick this system out. And it's going to be bringing just torrential rain to the East Coast as we get to the weekend. But it's really taking its good old sweet time. And that's why I've been calling this Flop Fest ever since yesterday. That's why we've had this lengthy duration of this gloom over Chicago starting yesterday. And then, of course, today. And we've had these surface temperatures warm enough where most of the precipitation we've had today has just been this drizzle. But, of course, then you have some of this warmer air moving over this snowpack. And our most immediate concern right now is this fog. And we have a dense fog advisory in effect until 9 o'clock. And especially for anybody, you know, if you're driving through a school zone or schools are letting out right now, just be really, really careful. This visibility has been terrible. It's less than an eighth of a mile in some cases. Is even affecting the airport too.
Now, earlier today, I had to shovel out a path because everything that was snow, it turned to ice, you know, and it was now wet ice. And I have workers in the house over the next 2 days. I'm sorry to have to share that with you, Tracy Butler from ABC7.
Thank you for sharing that.
But I got people fixing stuff. And so I didn't want, the guy shows up and goes, hey, you know, there's ice out here. You know, I take a slip and fall, you know, what kind of insurance you got? Honest to God, that's what the guy said to me. So I'm like, yeah.
Well, you know what? You should, because there's...
Okay, whatever. Mail. Yes, I should. Fine, whatever, I should. And so I get that, you know, I get a snow shovel out, and believe it or not, I have one. And I'm out there. I'm out there shoveling the ice. It was all ice. And I thought, man, this really has been a messy, messy, messy week, right? And... Now,
yeah, it's been a very messy week. And the problem is this snow that's coming tonight, it has such a high moisture content. And bottom line, what that means is, and we've talked about this before, how we refer to this as heart attack snow. I mean, this is that.
Oh, don't worry. I won't be shoveling again.
No, I know you won't. I know you always find
somebody. I'll find somebody else to do it. I'll get the kids to do it. I mean, I the guy was threatening me going into my house, so I had to do something about it. Right?
Well, I'm glad you did something.
And then I said, sir, you're going to have to take your boots off.
I'm just glad you didn't hand him the shovel and say, here, take care of it yourself. Because that's something you would do.
That would have been extra. That would have been extra. All right. Anyway. Yeah. All right. So this snow that's coming in tonight, when does it start?
Okay. So if you're out toward DeKalb, if you're up toward McHenry, the winter weather advisory will go into effect for you at 6 p.m. That doesn't mean at 6 p.m. it starts pouring snow. It just means for you to, you know what, let's start watching 6 to 7, because we need to get the columns cold enough where we do start getting that precipitation turning to snow. So we'll start to see it in some of those far west and far northwest suburbs, out in DeKalb, up in Lake County, up in McHenry County, somewhere developing between about 6 and 7. I think it's going to take a while before we really get to start to see some snow here in the city. And most likely that may not even happen until 9 or 10 o'clock. I think we'll get through the evening commute just with the fog and the drizzle, and that's a big enough headache in itself. But once this snow gets going, it's going to come down fairly vigorously, and especially if you're going to be out. I know how you like, you know, your Friday nights out, and you're going to be, you know, out and about.
Are you kidding me? Coronavirus? Are you kidding me? Go ahead.
You'll be back in the bunker. But for anybody who is and who is not afraid, don't be scared. Be prepared. I mean, but seriously, the roads, even into the overnight period and tomorrow morning, are going to be challenging. And the Weather Service doesn't issue a winter weather advisory for amounts of snow more than they issue it for hazardous travel conditions. And I really think that travel around Chicago's tomorrow morning is going to be rather challenging.
And then by tomorrow afternoon, it kind of clears. It clears up and it gets, and it's going to be warmer, right? So a lot of stuff's
going to melt. Doesn't clear up. I think tomorrow afternoon, you're going to say, my gosh, are we not done with this yet? Because I think we're going to have these persistent...
Tracy Butler!
I think it will be lighter, but I think we are going to have these persistent pinwheels.
I got about a minute left, and you're already really, really making me mad.
I have more to say.
So I know you do. It's never stopped. To the north and the west, is that where the higher accumulations are going to be? Is that what I heard?
They will, and especially, I'd say anywhere from a line of about Waukegan down through Hinsdale and west of that, we're looking at 3 to 6 inches of accumulation. Mm-hmm. In the city, most likely it's going to be in that 1 to 2 area.
And then what about south?
And farther south, we're looking at probably 1 to 3. If you're down toward Kankakee, Joliet, you'll be in that 1 to 3 category, as well as over in Northwest Indiana.
Got it. Because Northwest Indiana, no matter, we get 3 inches here, they get 30. That's how that always goes.
Well, but this is not going to have a lake effect.
Okay.
Scenario here, but so I just want to warn the person who unfortunately is going to have to shovel the snow for you, Will. Just be careful.
I want to say, all right, I just want to say, as I was standing out there shoveling this ice snow mix or whatever the hell this was that I was shoveling this morning, and I just thought to myself, I so wish that I could, that Tracy Butler could see me doing this, or all the other doubters, all the people who think that I've, actually it's everybody I know, could see me doing this, because I was doing like, you know, real work.
We have no proof. And it's about time you did some real work in your life.
Yeah, don't worry. Maybe I'll take the security camera video and I'll put it up on social media. All right.
We want the proof.
Tracy Butler, right. She's from the ABC7 Weather Center, and she just joined us.
Safe travel. So
thank you very much. No, you be safe as well. Goodbye.
Bye.
Good night. This is generally her bedtime, because she gets up at like 1 o'clock in the morning. All right. Thank you to her for doing this. Kevin Powell is live at Sox Fest. We're going to join him after the news from Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. Coming your way in 2 minutes.
Your very own WG.
Rob Khan Show right here on 720 WGN. Our friend Kevin Powell is out at Sox Fest. The doors just opened. And Luis Robert, was he standing in line outside waiting to get in himself?
He gets the VIP treatment.
Oh, he does. All right.
Yes, he's got a great look going on. He's got kind of a bleached hair situation. He's just he just looks like a rock star, Ro.
He's going to be a rock star,
he's your
Kevin.
Guy. You've already declared him your guy.
I, 2 seasons ago, declared him my guy. You know, and I want to just say that we spent a lot of time, Kevin Powell, news director of the Ro Khan Show, along with corrections director Lauren Lapka, we spent a lot of time at Guaranteed Rate Field last season, going to those games. And you guys all have your own people that you like on the team, right? Mm. And now you hung out with them in Mexico, and you partied, and I think...
I saw Dylan. Lauren, Dylan said hello.
Oh, hello. If you ever can, you know, make your way through the crowd again to say hi.
That almost sounds like, hello, you know, he can let me know himself. Lauren is we've already determined that she'll end up marrying a White Sox before it's all said and done.
What?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Anyway, the point is that we have all the major players are in, and we all have our favorites, and Luis Robert is mine. I think he's going to be one of the great baseball players of the 21st century, based on what we've seen already of, you know, what his pedigree is and then what he did in the minor leagues, and everybody's so excited about him. So, and he's going to be the center fielder of the future, right?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think he's got a chance to be a perennial all-star. He has all the tool sets you could possibly want in a baseball player, completely dominated down in the minors last year, and they signed him, gave him that long-term deal to lock him up for the foreseeable future. So, no doubt about it. I mean, you could see Luis Robert in center and Eloy Jimenez in left field or right field, wherever they decide to put him, for a long, long time on the south side. Luis Robert, by the way, will be signing autographs at 8 o'clock tonight if you're coming to Sox Fest.
You should go get an autograph from him.
You should. This is the chance to do it. And then put that baseball in a very secure spot in your home, or maybe give it to your bank. Whatever you need to do, protect that baseball. It could be worth some cheddar someday. Everybody's here. I think the players, you know, as I mentioned, are just as excited as the fans are, you know, seeing the fact that this year, what, 4 of the rebuild, essentially, and then you mix in some free agent signings like Dallas Keuchel, Yasmani Grandal, who is one of the best catchers in all of baseball, and he was the top catcher in free agency by far. The Sox go out and get him. They spend more money in free agency than they ever have as an organization. You've got, and then there's still players to come, too. I mean, the core here is already here in the year. Yoan Moncada, Tim Anderson, Eloy, Luis Robert. But then you have guys like Andrew Vaughn, who was their top draft pick from a year ago. And if you look into any of what the scouts are saying or any of the baseball trades that rank these guys, he's already near the top. And the guy hasn't even played in the minors yet. So there's just a ton of buzz around Sox Fest in this season. I can't remember a season that had this sort of excitement for White Sox baseball in a long, long time.
It's one of those situations where they're going to do a walkout, like all these fan fests do.
Yeah, they did a player introduction situation. And not just players. They did
the Rick Hahn, the general manager, did he get introduced? Because I imagine that Sox fans, who would normally boo a general manager or anybody who's in a suit for any reason, must be very, very happy with him.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. And it's been nothing but it's been tough. It's been nothing but losing seasons recently. But what Rick Hahn's done, I mean, it's been frustrating. Rebuilds are tough. I mean, you basically admit to losing and tanking, but you do it to build not just a championship season. Rick Hahn keeps stressing this is about multiple championships, multiple division championships, competing for the playoffs year in and year out, not just for a 2-3 year window. I mean, if you look at the contracts for all these guys, they're all locked up for minimum 4 or 5 years. So if things go according to plan, the Sox could be a force in the American League for a long, long time.
All right. Aaron Bummer is also going to be there. Lauren, I suggest if you're going to marry anybody on the White Sox, it should not be Aaron Bummer, because you don't want to be Lapka Bummer. Like Lauren Lapka Bummer. It's just I don't like this.
Are you kidding me? Haven't we had this talk that they're taking my name?
Aaron Lapka would probably that would be better for him.
Might be an upgrade.
I don't know.
Lauren, when you marry Eloy a White Sox Lapka player, we get us free tickets.
Why don't you marry a White Sox player and get us free tickets, Kevin?
You know, it's legal in the state now, Kevin. You could do that if you wanted to. And I did. You know, I noticed that Kevin was very attracted to Luis Robert's hair earlier. Hola, Luis.
He's got a lot of money, bro. I don't think I'd
have to worry about it. Mi amo, Kevin.
Yeah, you know, you never know, bro.
Mi esta gender fluidido. We learned about this last week. I still didn't quite understand.
Yeah.
It. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Uh-huh. So. I don't know. All right. Well, maybe I'll marry one.
Yeah. Man, I miss you guys. I wish you guys were out here with me.
Yeah, I know.
I've got a very glamorous broadcasting booth set up here.
I saw pictures of it. It looks lovely. He built a gold chair for himself.
He did.
It's very nice.
We're having a good time.
Yeah, it's very nice. Well, it is going to be a lot of fun for the people who are going to go out there this weekend. It's interesting because White Sox fans have been waiting a long time, since 2005, right? Yeah. For this team to be as competitive as they were in that era, and I mean, win the World Series, it makes it the most competitive. But it's subsequently the Cubs won the World Series, and that makes White Sox fans madder than them losing the World Series, right? Mm-hmm. So it's just going to be a turnaround moment here. I'm telling you, people are going to be having fun at that ballpark this summer, man. There's just this. Do not, if you're going to get single game tickets, get them in the outfield, because you're going to be catching balls every inning out there between the foul poles.
True.
So much. All right. Kevin, we'll check back with you in your glamorous position. Where is this again? It's at the McCormick Place, the main McCormick Place?
Yes. Gate 40 is where you'd enter, and then you go up a couple flights of stairs, and you will find Sox Fest 2020.
All right. There we go. Thank you very much. Hi, Tim Anderson. I'm Kevin. You might have met me before. You have beautiful eyes. All right. So Lauren Lapka, what's happening in the news, in the traffic and the weather? When it comes to the weather, we all want to know, what did Skilling say? Watch for updated forecasts from Chicago's most trusted meteorologist, Tom Skilling, weeknights on WGN-TV. Look what the cat just dragged in, literally and figuratively, into the studio. And you'll see what I did after I explained what's going on. Frank Robb is here. You know, he's Alligator Robb, the guy that became Chicago's hero. He got the alligator out of the Humboldt Park Lagoon over the summer. And, you know, he's been fed it up and down this town. And it became a national celebrity, national talk shows and things like that. And you're back in town. See, this is a callback, is what they call this in comedy, except it's backwards. You are here in town because they're doing a charity event tonight, the Chicago Party Animals Pillar Loft, that's at 910 West Jackson, and it's a cocktail party. There's going to be beer and wine and whiskey flights and hors d'oeuvres, and it's to help open the Chicago Kitten Nursery that is opening here in Chicago, and that's a not-for-profit for abandoned kittens, right, and cats, I'd assume. So thanks for being back here, man. Now I can talk to you.
Oh, thank you for having me, sir. Always appreciate it.
Now, let's, you know, you almost got taken out by the coyote catcher here. There was a moment that the coyote catcher kind of went a little subterranean. You know, that was the thing. We didn't really get to know the coyote catcher, and he caught the right coyote, so that worked out.
Yeah,
so that was good. And you also got the right alligator, so that was always very positive. But now did they just say that you were in contact with the coyote catcher guy?
I know him. Yeah, he's the same guy that was with me the night I caught Chance. So that's the thing. You know, everybody wants things done immediately. The world of wild animals works at its own pace. And you couldn't have asked Chicago Animal Care and Control to do anything better than what they did. That went down so fast.
It did go down fast, yeah. Because but coyotes, I mean, I know this is not specifically your expertise, but coyotes have fairly short roaming areas in in a day or so, right? Because they kind of go in circles around areas looking for food or for mates or for whatever it is.
I'm not sure how they work in the city. I know how they work out in the country, and they have sometimes pretty big areas they go across in the country. But in the city, it's a whole different animal. And the fact that they were able to go out the next day and come up with that animal, that's Chicago Animal Care and Control doing work. That was amazing. I was super proud of them. Amazing stuff.
They said that that particular animal had a BB lodged in its shoulder. It had been shot at with a BB gun. Yeah, and no one's come forward to say they were the one that tried to shoot a coyote with a BB gun, because I would imagine people would remember that.
Nobody's going to come forward to say they let loose an alligator in the Humboldt Park Lagoon either.
Well, that's true.
Yeah,
that's true. And I know why they wouldn't, but you know, what I'm confused by is you know how that actually happens. But they're going to. This is now a rescue coyote. They're going to use this coyote to do training, and it's going to live in a reserve that it's going to go on. Even though it bit a human, which is pretty unusual, right? Once an animal bites a human, they
normally, once an animal messes up, it's the end of his story. The fact that they were able to do this for this animal in this situation, a wild animal that's been hurt, of course they're gonna reach out and try to put that pain on something else besides them. That's the way things in the wild work. They've worked out something here that I could have never imagined they pulled off. It's really good. Really, really good story.
So how's Chance doing?
Awesome. Okay. Very good. You'll know more about that pretty soon.
What does that mean?
You'll have to figure it out. It'll come together for you. It'll make sense soon.
Oh, my God. Frank's now you're teasing like a broadcaster. Coming up, details on how you'll know more about Chance the Snapper. Is still a very popular exhibit?
Yeah, he's grown 4 inches since he's been in St. Augustine.
Really?
Yeah, he's bulking up.
So how big will he get?
As big as you can imagine, man. It would not surprise me if he hits 9, 10, 11 feet. There's no reason he can't.
What is when you got him, how big was he? 3?
No, I think he measured right on 4 feet.
4 feet?
And
okay.
He's 4'4" now.
And so, and that's a juvenile, right? Those are,
yes, sir.
And how young would he have been, do you think?
Guessing, between 3 and 5, probably.
And how long do they live?
As long as a person.
Really?
Yep.
So they can go 80 years?
Yes, sir.
90 years?
Yep.
Well, reptiles tend to, I don't know, there's something about being a reptile.
It's got its benefits and it's got its drawbacks.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, it'd be kind of swampy, I suppose, but but you can go for a while. Yeah. All right, so.
Unless it gets cold.
So when do they get to that full-grown size?
It takes every different crocodilian a different amount of time. Some of them, 10, 12 years, they'll be 9 or 10 feet, and some might take between 20 and 30 years. With him, I'd be guessing here in the next few years, you'll see him as an 8-foot gator. It won't take long.
Good young athletic kid, you think?
He's a boss.
He is. Is he really?
He's a boss.
Now, did we get him a female?
So he had 2 girlfriends and now he's got 5, I think.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. He's living life large.
Yeah. That's we should rename him Hubbard Street. It's a great story though. People still loving it, and you're still the man, and that's why you are in town for this this kitten rescue project. WindyKittyChicago.com/events if you want to get tickets tonight. WindyKittyChicago.com/events. And now, we talked to you a couple of months ago when you're in town for an event, and it was right around Halloween when it was really very crappy here. Now you're back, weather-wise. Now you're back, weather again really bad. And we had talked to you back then because, you know, you're from Florida and you're a crocodilian expert. And so you don't spend a whole lot of time in freezing weather.
It's true.
And now you are, I said go get a winter coat. You went and you got a winter coat. You got the proper and appropriate winter coat and you forgot to bring it up.
Yes, sir. Before you know it, I'll be falling out of trees. Yeah.
So what was that all about? That was in Florida. There were iguanas falling out of trees, right? Because it was so cold down there?
So this is where do I even start? This is one of those things people in Florida have forever complained. There's these invasive species they don't want around. They're trying to figure out ways to get rid of them forever. And then the cold shows up, and they start dying from the cold and falling out of trees. And everybody starts freaking out about that. Then you choose a side. What side are you on? Do you want them there? Or do you not want them there? Do you want a little bit of natural selection going on, or do you want to you want to keep them all around and hug them all? You make up your mind where you're at.
These, well, you see, mad and sad are on the same spectrum, right?
Yes,
there.
Yes, sir. You're 100% right.
That's where it goes. Yeah. You know, they're mad until they get sad. All right. So, what is the iguana population like in Florida? It's pretty big, right?
Yes, sir. It's kind of exploded.
Yeah. And why is it? Because people are feeding them. What's happening?
It's just one of those things. It's a warm tropical climate, like they're used to, and yeah, they eat hibiscus plants and everything else. They eat whatever they want.
And people aren't hunting them, or there's no real predator for them.
There's
right?
supposedly, you know, people that are trying to take care of it. It's like the python thing. Who knows? It's all in their minds.
Well, isn't it now? Obviously, you know, Florida is where you do most of your work. The except for Humboldt Park Lagoon, there are all kinds of species that are now down in the Everglades that really weren't native to the Everglades, right?
We're seeing
about
them
pythons.
A lot more than the Everglades, too. I mean, further north, we're finding every kind of chameleon you can think of, finding iguanas. You're seeing occasionally different types of other lizards that you monitors and things like that you would have never seen anywhere else. They're all of a sudden showing up.
And some of those can be very dangerous, right?
I don't know. As dangerous as anything.
Komodo dragon, though, that's not a good one to have.
Yeah, right? I don't know if we have any loose Komodo dragons.
I'm worried about that myself. I do worry about anything that could bite me. And then, but also pythons and snakes like that, they've found in the Everglades.
Right. It's beyond anything. You hear these stories about pythons eating alligators. A 10-foot boss alligator, you know, or a big bull alligator.
Mm-hmm. Like our boy still, Chance is going
to
be.
Exactly. They're still the top of the food chain. So those snakes are still food to those animals. You know, can it happen to a smaller gator? Sure. But the top of the food chain is still the crocodilian world down there.
Well, I'm not going to listen. I'm all about the crocodilians right now since I met you. I mean, you've turned my head around totally on this. I think like a lot of us couldn't figure out how that thing got into the Humboldt Park Lagoon on its own. It couldn't have. It had to have had a human assist on that,
yes,
one,
sir.
One would guess. But there is a certain amount of romance now to the crocodile here because we don't have a lot of them. Although if we started seeing them showing up in our pools in the summer, we'd probably have the same reaction that people in Florida do. Oh, my God. Marge, call Frank Robb. I had spent some time in Southwest Florida, and it is they're everywhere.
Yeah, we're actually having some back where I'm from. We're having a couple of crocodiles that just showed up, so we're dealing with that back home. It's historically the county I'm from. There's only been two in the past 30 years that showed up there. I caught one, which is like the furthest north one had ever been caught, and my uncle.
That's pretty far north. Because you're St. Augustine. You're up.
Kennedy Space Center.
Yeah.
Yeah, about an hour and a half south of St. Augustine, kind of right in the Space Coast. But yeah, the two have been caught there over the past 30 years, with the two furthest North American crocodiles ever caught, and now there's all of a sudden a couple of them up there in that county. So what do you contribute that to? Is it global warming, or you know what's going on? Nobody can really describe it or explain it.
Yeah, it could also be the same thing that happened here, though, too.
100%
right? Like
could be.
Humans bringing them up, thinking they're cute when they're little, or they're never going to get bigger. Is there a species of lizard that looks like a crocodile, never gets big, like a lizard size?
Not really.
No. See, now that's something you should know, people. When somebody says, oh, no, this is a pygmy crocodile, it's never going to get bigger than 6 inches. Don't believe them.
There's dwarf crocodiles that stay, you know, stay about the size of Chance, stay about 4 feet. But
yeah,
they're still
but that's 4 feet.
In the foot range, yes, in yeah. the many feet range.
Something that's like a cute that you're going to keep in an aquarium, not going to happen.
I appreciate the fact that you think through these things.
Yeah, I do. Thank you, Frank. That's what I do best. You keep thinking, Butch. That's what you're good at. All right. If you want to go see Frank tonight and get some hors d'oeuvres and get some wine, get some beer, get some whiskey flying, you can do that. It's Chicago Party Animals, Pillar Loft, 910 West Jackson Street in Chicago. If you'd like tickets to that, it's windykittychicago.com/events. Frank Robb. He is the guy who caught Chance the Snapper. Thank you so much for being here, as
bless
always.
You, sir. Thank you.
All right, let's talk to Kim Gordon. She's got the WGN News right now for the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. Rob Concho, right here on 720 WGN. This spring, Chicago's hometown baseball rivalry heads to Arizona. One lucky fan will win a trip for two to Phoenix, including airfare, hotel, and tickets to the Wintrust Crosstown Series game on March 13th. Register today at WGNradio.com/contests. Sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, and presenting sponsor of the Wintrust Crosstown Series. Kevin Powell is live with us at Sox Fest right now, getting ready for that. I know everybody is talking about that March 13th game, looking at the, probably the discussion in line on the way in.
Yes, very much. And I can confirm baseball's back because I just had my first hot dog of the season. Very exciting stuff. We can officially bring in the new White Sox season here. There was some news with Dallas Keuchel, the new free agent signing for the White Sox, starting pitcher who played for the Houston Astros, who you may have heard, were a bit of a sign-stealing scandal.
Uh-huh.
He apologized for it. Says they didn't do it every game, but admitting that, obviously, it was the wrong thing to do. So there was some news there from Dallas Keuchel. Other than that, just positive vibes all around.
What happened to that scandal? It seems to have really gone subterranean in the last 10 days. I mean, not this week, but last week, it was a huge story. We thought this was going to be the emergent sports scandal, maybe the biggest one ever to hit baseball, and now it's crickets. So one wonders, is that because, this would be my speculation, that it's because there's evidence that everybody's been doing it forever.
Yeah.
And so then if you're going to take out the Astros for doing this, don't you have to take out everybody else?
I think so. I mean, they're still conducting the investigation in the 2018 Boston Red Sox. I think that there are probably even more teams that were doing stuff like this in-game, but the Astros were the first big story, the first one to get caught. So I think we'll hear more from it. I think the crickets, too, Ro, was the Astros, similar, you know, like their fan fest, their convention was last weekend. And there was a lot of frustration because none of the players admitted to it or apologized for it at all. I mean, Dallas Keuchel is really the first one to apologize for his role, if any, in the sign-stealing scandal with the Astros. But, I mean, Jose Altuve dodged questions at their fan fest. Alex Bregman dodged questions. So there was a lot of frustrations there. But I think right now we're just waiting to hear what Major League Baseball does to the Boston Red Sox, who were had Joey Cora as their – or Alex Cora as their manager during the 2018 season. He was with the Astros in 2017. So, it was crickets from the Houston Astros and players who were actually involved with this. So we didn't get much reaction from it. So Dallas Keuchel's really the first one to come out and like basically publicly admit that, yeah, that they were all doing it.
And was, but he's a pitcher though.
He's a pitcher. So,
he would be the victim of that.
Right.
And one would imagine that pitchers, I don't know where pitchers would really be on that, quite honestly. If I were a pitcher and my team were doing that, I'd feel badly, like, you know, this is my job, and I wouldn't want the other team doing it to me.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, there have been multiple players who have come out on social media, you know, commenting on it where they were like, you know, I knew something was going on. I was wondering why they were laying off certain pitches. I was wondering how they were hitting all my pitches. I felt like I had really good stuff that game, and they were all over my stuff. So I think from a pitcher standpoint, absolutely, that's your craft. That's your profession. That's what you work on leading up to games, is to have some nasty stuff. And if they're all over it, that just takes all the integrity out of it. You know, Dallas Keuchel said, quote, "It's just what the state of baseball was at that point in time."
You mean a couple months ago? What point in time is he talking about?
Well, this is referring to the 2017 season. He says, I personally am sorry for what's come about the whole situation. He said, it's not like every game we had it going on. So that's admitting that they did do something, obviously.
Oh, man.
Everything Major League Baseball said. But, yeah, so that's the newsiest stuff out of Sox Fest. Other than that, it's just a bunch of crazy White Sox fans who are super pumped for the season. The line just keeps growing, and people are filing in. It's really cool what they did here. You know, last year was at the hotel.
Right.
This year it's just on one floor, so everything's just in one gigantic convention room, which makes it convenient. And there's all sorts of panels and autograph sessions. There's a little mini baseball field for kids to go in and get instructions and throw the baseball around as well. So a lot of
Play bingo
stuff.
With Abreu? I heard that's going on too.
I saw Jose Abreu is hosting bingo, which should be fun. I don't know. I'm going to stick around here and try to partake in some of this stuff. But
with Abreu.
Bingo with Abreu.
That
That's
is
right.
Such a funny idea.
Mm-hmm. I love it. So
will it just be Abreu? You have to get an A-B-R-E-U. You can't get a bingo.
I'm not exactly sure the technicalities of it.
I would like to know if that's the answer. That's awesome. Yeah. All right. Well, hang tight there, Kevin Powell, yeah. Live from Sox Fest, which is in McCormick Place this year. Lauren Lapka has the WGN traffic and weather right now. Brocon Show right here, 720 WGN. All right, Mark Maxwell is from Nexstar Media in Springfield, and there's news out of Springfield about gambling on sports being here in time, legal in the state of Illinois, by the time we get to March Madness. But before we can get to that, Mark, there's another breaking story that you just posted right now concerning the Illinois Gaming Board. What was it?
Good evening. Thanks for having me on. Yeah, we just learned that an employee at the Illinois Gaming Board leaked sensitive confidential information to unknown federal agencies, three federal government entities. Could that be the FBI, as they're currently digging into this broad investigation about corruption in Springfield? We don't really know yet. We're working to find that out. But we know that a gaming board staffer has been suspended after they had a breach of protocol. We obtained a letter that sort of uncovered this. So it's still the early stages. We don't know what to deduce from all that, but certainly an interesting development.
Yeah, and do we know, was this, are they assuming that it was for some sort of advantage to somebody, that this information would have been leaked? Could somebody gain advantage from that?
Certainly that could be a part of the reason for the suspension. The gaming board has strict laws. The state law says you can't give one applicant or one license holder an advantage. And if that was the case, that's the reason for the state law that has a strict prohibition on leaking this information. Mm-hmm. The fact that it went to the federal government raises the specter of, was this an ongoing criminal investigation? We don't know yet.
All right. Does this impact the moving forward of legalized gambling on sports and other things, including the Oscars, right? Indiana just did that. If you want to bet on the Oscars, you can go over to Gary right now or to Hammond, and you could place a bet. But in Illinois, we're trying to get a similar kind of thing like they have in Indiana, where you'd have mobile gambling on your phone. You could do sports betting or go to one of the many sports facilities throughout Illinois, the major stadiums, racetracks, and then some off-track betting kind of places to go and bet on whatever it happens to be. You could bet on the Super Bowl. You could bet legally. You could bet on things that a lot of people are already betting on, but they haven't done it legally, and now you can. They're now saying that that might be, based on how quickly they're trying to get this thing done, even though it should have been done by now, they think that maybe by March Madness, maybe by the middle of March, that it'll be available.
Well, right. So a couple things. First of all, this other investigation, I don't see any reason why this would upend or delay the rollout here. In fact, that letter was sent weeks ago, and just this week we saw the gaming board release these new emergency rules. One insider told me they thought just these rules that came out were rather technical in nature. They talked about what kind of bets you can make, what kind of bets you can't make, how to deposit, how the bets will actually work. But all that technical language coming out, that's usually the fine print at the end, perhaps a signal that they're about to approve a license. I think that's one reason why you're seeing some speculation that this could be up and running by March Madness. Now, the question is, we saw that there was the law when it came out. You could not bet on Illinois teams. But an interesting nugget buried in these 66 pages of rules shows that they're not going to ban you from betting on the U of I or Loyola if you pick them in a parlay. So because those teams can't by themselves decide the outcome of, say, a 4 or 5-game parlay bet, that might be fair game. They're still working on that. But you mentioned the Academy Awards. There's all kinds of different bets that could become legal here pretty soon.
Yeah. Now, when you say Illinois teams, you mean Illinois University, college teams.
College teams,
right?
Correct.
Okay. You obviously, if you weren't able to bet on the Cubs or Sox, Bulls, Bears, White, or Hawks, that could be a problem. Because I think that's exactly why people would be doing it. Because they bet their favorite teams.
I'm a little amped up. I mean, if I'm setting the over-under, I'm picking the White Sox at least 92 wins this year. So, I'd like to see that. I mean, who knows?
Oh, you know what? We don't have that sort of... We are very confident in them. But earlier in the week, we were looking at the over-under on the White Sox, and almost everybody on this team, especially the two White Sox experts, which, you know, Lauren and Kevin, they were like at 80... Was that right? 88, I think it was?
Yeah, it was like mid to upper 80s.
Mid to upper 80s.
Oh, man. Hmm? Take the over. Get the money now. I mean, just take the over.
All right. So, and I want to go back to your breaking story here, because this is this could actually have some legs here. Mark Maxwell is who we're talking to from Nexstar Media down in Springfield, Springfield bureau chief. If this, if they find out this Illinois Gaming Board employee was suspended because there apparently was a breach of the security of applications, right, or of information about people who are applying for licenses, and there was apparently a leak of information about somebody who was applying, one of the license applications, and it was from this one employee himself or herself? That's it?
Yes, we don't know. It seems to be just one employee acting alone that gave this sensitive confidential information to three unknown federal entities. And some of the letter here is kind of standard boilerplate language. So in some sense, we can't read too much into it. The state law requires anytime there's a breach of this kind of personal confidential information at the gaming board, the state is required to notify Speaker Madigan and former President Cullerton and the four legislative leaders. They just have to keep them in the loop. That's sort of supposed to be a safety check to make sure that if there is any untoward influence or any advantage to one side or the other, that information is disclosed. But I think we still have more information to learn about exactly what that information was and how it's being handled. The gaming board has asked those federal agencies to destroy the evidence or at the very least sequester it, keep it under wraps to make sure there is no advantage to be gained by one applicant over another.
Okay. I just want to get this straight. This employee who did this at the Illinois Gaming Board gave it to federal government entities, right?
Correct.
So that would we would assume, not certain, but we would assume they would be law enforcement or revenue-based entities if you were going to give it to
FCC,
anybody.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're definitely, I mean, you're probably not giving that to the Air Force. So this is...
The Space Force, right.
This is a situation where this could be a whistleblower, right? I mean, and the state... The gaming board has now suspended the potential whistleblower because this is information that was not then passed along to, as per the rules, as you're pointing out, Mark, to Speaker Madigan. So this the plot is going to thicken so quickly here because this really does smell like somebody trying to get ahead of something.
Yeah, you have to be careful. We don't really know yet, but it certainly looks like
you have to be careful.
I don't have
to be careful. I'm a talk show host. You have to be careful because you're the bureau chief of Nexstar Media down in Springfield. So I'm going to let you be careful, and I'm going to recklessly speculate that this is a whistleblower who is now picking up this, trying to tip something in because the feds are swirling anyway, right? I mean, that's. Down in Springfield.
There's nothing in this letter that would prove your theory wrong.
Yes, exactly right. That's exactly right, Mark. That's all I need. I don't need to be proven right. I just can't be proven wrong. Mark Maxwell, thank you very much. Next to our media bureau chief down in Springfield, Illinois. All right. Well, that's very interesting. Because so let's just go back and explain this. A gaming board member has been... relieved, temporarily at least, relieved of their gaming board duties, suspended, because he or she leaked information about license applications to federal entities without asking permission from the leadership in Springfield to do that, legislative leadership. That smells like something... That is a tipping point because the feds are swirling all over Springfield right now. I mean, I would not go to the bathroom in the Capitol, near the Capitol. I would drive four counties over before I even wanted to go to the bathroom there because there are probably cameras and microphones and like everywhere down there trying to catch these guys. And then probably the more important thing is that we might actually have legalized gambling here. in organized sports gambling here by March Madness, which is really important. All right, coming up in the top five at five, could you soon get a pot peddler's license in Chicago? I know. I thought they already had them.
To alcohol, the cause of and solution to all of life's problems.
Yeah! Drink, man, I'm gonna get gas. Gonna get high, man, I ain't had enough. Leave me a triple shot of that stuff. Gonna get drunk, won't you listen right here? I want one bourbon, one shot, one beer, one bourbon, one shot, one beer.
Tastes great, makes women appear more attractive, and makes a person virtually invulnerable to criticism.
Alcohol is a way of life. Alcohol is my way of life. And I aim to keep it.
Find it, buy it, make it. I don't care. Just get me some booze and fast.
I can't take this much longer. I gotta have a beer.
Fat, drunk, and stupid is no way to go through life, sir.
No, but it is fashionable. All right, the Knurble Wagon is out. It's a special Sox Fest edition of the Knurble Wagon. Lauren and I are manning the studios here on the corner of Wabash and the river. Oh, the Wabash.
Wabash.
Wabash. Wacker and the river.
Wow, you already have opened the Knurble Avenue.
I'm sorry. What time is it? Wacker. Wacker and the river is the same thing, right? Wacker and the river. Columbus and Wacker and the river. This is not my point. My point is that Kevin is out at Sox Fest, which is at McCormick Place this year, and it's jammed, right?
Yeah, the fans just keep filing in here. It's just been a steady stream of fans through the front gated area. As we were saying, just a ton of buzz, ton of excitement. Everybody's here. The current players, former players, Ozzie Guillen's here, Michael Kopech's here.
No, that's not a surprise right there.
No.
Ozzie's like me. He likes a fun time. He always tries to find a way.
Ozzie is a one-man theatrical performance entertainment stop. The guy is just, when we were in Mexico, Lauren and I were trying to host like a panel going away thing, and at one point I just said, you know what, Ozzie, just take the microphone, because he kept interrupting us and he's making jokes. I'm like, fine, Ozzie, here's the microphone.
It's all yours.
Yeah.
It's all yours, Ozzie. Ozzie is, I absolutely love him, but awesome. I started to feel like I had really made it in this town when I was always showing up in the same bar or restaurant as he was.
Yeah.
You know what? That's a good sign right there.
He's around,
a really good guy.
Yeah, if Ozzie's around, it's going to be a good time.
Yeah. I'm glad he's back in town.
For sure.
I would like to see him doing other things here. Obviously, he's on NBC Sportsnet and all that, but he's a majorly great ambassador for baseball, but also for the White Sox. I mean, in a way that he's like the Ditka of the White Sox, right? No other way to describe him.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, he's a character, and Sox fans obviously love him, being the manager of the 2005 White Sox. So he draws a crowd for sure. I already saw him taking pictures with a bunch of fans upstairs. He knows how to please the people.
Yes, he does. All right. The Knurble Wagon is out. You know what, Kevin? You're there. I'm sure they're selling beer at Sox Fest. My guess is that they are.
They are. Can confirm.
Yeah.
I haven't had any, but I can confirm that they do sell beer.
And you can join us virtually that way, and we'll hold down. The Knurble Wagon is rolled. We'll hold down. Coming up a little bit later on this hour, we're actually going to have these people in studio with us who make the perfect mocktail. That's the cocktail that it tastes just like liquor, but doesn't have any in it.
And I never really understood the point of that.
Well, it's good for. It's good for people who. Either medically can't drink or for some other reason can't drink and they want to be, still a part of what's happening, around them. It's very hard. I have done this. It's very hard when you're not drinking to be around people who are.
I remember that.
it was short-lived, but it happened.
I'm not having any. I'm like, wait, what? What's happening?
I took 9 months off. I was pregnant, so I thought that was probably the best thing for the baby. But, the beautiful part of that is you wake up every morning and it's the best part of your day when you wake up
instead of the opposite.
Yes.
damn it, I'm still breathing.
Right. He's like, oh my God. Oh, where you have that moment where you're like, what did I do last week? Oh no.
Right.
Oh no.
Right. Anxiety sets in.
Right. And then you start texting apologies to everybody, and that's, you know, how it goes. All right. So we got the top five coming your way. Then we're going to meet these people who want to help people out who would like a cocktail that doesn't have any alcohol in it. Ritual Zero Proof is what it's called. It's going to be kind of interesting stuff. And then our friend Mike Lee, the now retired boxer, although he can always come out of retirement, I think. Chicago area favorite is here, and he's going to be they're doing a really cool charity event. He and a retired Navy SEAL, David Rutherford, are going to be in studio, and I'm probably going to get torn apart, I think is what's going to happen. I should not challenge. Thank God there's going to be mocktails, because I won't challenge either of them to a fight, because it would not end well. That's coming away in the 6 o'clock hour. All right, let's talk to Lauren Lapka about what's happening on the roads and in the skies.
It's the top five on the Rokan Show.
Five.
Let's go.
Four, three, two, one.
Now, it's the top five at five on the Rokan Show, sponsored by the Hip and Knee Center, where they help you feel new again.
Ready?
Yes.
Yes.
Get on with it.
We'll do just that.
Number five.
These are the top five, either most newsworthy or most interesting or most funny things that happened today. So, number five being the most newsworthy, Illinois health officials announced that the second confirmed case of coronavirus in the United States is here in Chicago. Yes. If you're wondering, I did freak out when I woke up this morning and I saw that. But I shouldn't have, according to Dr. Allison Ardaway, who is the Chicago Department of Public Health commissioner. She says that this particular woman who has these tests positive for the virus took precautions, including contacting her doctor before arriving at the office.
A few days after arriving home, the patient began to feel unwell. She called ahead to alert her doctor to her illness, rather than just presenting to a clinic or emergency department. This is exactly what any potentially ill returning traveler from Wuhan should do. Call ahead and seek medical care.
Okay. All right. Now, the Chicago Health Commissioner also said, don't freak out. Row.
She has not taken public transportation. She has not attended any large gatherings. And actually, to our best knowledge at this point, she has not had extended close contact with anyone outside her home since returning from China and prior to admission to the healthcare system. So this is all very reassuring in terms of infection risk to the general public, which again remains low nationally and locally.
I suppose that's good news. They weren't clear about how many people in her household she had contact with, though. And then what do you do about that? Now, one of the reasons, one of the interesting things about the coronavirus, though, is that it is obviously, it's highly virulent. They're seeing increasing numbers every day in China, and the death rate seems to be remaining at around 3%, which is, when you stop and you think about that, well, that's not that much. The flu is a 1% death rate, but these are the kinds of viruses that humans do not have an antibody to, and there's no vaccine for it. And viruses, if you're not taken care of well, and not necessarily with medicine, because there's really no medicine that can help you except to bring your fever down. But if you're not properly hydrated, you're not aided with breathing in case you have lung complications or whatever it is, these things can be very deadly. So we are keeping our fingers crossed that this does not become a national problem. But it's justifiably alarming that the second case in the United States happened right here in Chicago. Checking in at
number four.
All right. Your pot dealer. And, you know, you all have one. I'm sure you do. Don't lie. Your pot dealer might soon be able to get his own license. That's right. The idea of small-scale pot peddlers being able to go to farmers markets and sell their wares is apparently becoming, it may be a thing. Community activist Teo Hardeman, who's president of the group Violence Interrupters Incorporated. Did you need to incorporate those? That should be a charity, 501c3, but that's a separate issue. I'll talk to Teo about that. says that there has been unfairness in the letting of the contracts here, or the letting of the licenses, I should say, for people who are opening up these, you know, the big dispensaries and other places where you're able to get, whether it's a medical dispensary or now these storefront dispensaries that are going to be opening throughout Chicago in the next couple of months, because there are no minorities involved. And he says the problem has been that there's the licenses are so expensive to obtain.
It's totally unacceptable that none of the marijuana dispensaries are owned by people of color. My vision would be a $250 peddler's license, and the young men can set up shop at farmers markets. There would be designated areas where they can sell the marijuana maybe from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. A response from the governor's office and the mayor talking about making sure everything is safe. But let me say this. Why does everybody have to make sure things are safe now that we're talking about empowering African-American males and females in the hood, so to speak?
It's an interesting idea. I wonder if they're... Can you license the guy in your mailroom? That's the question. But if it's 9 to 5, you're going to have to, it's gonna have to be somebody in the office. And everybody knows who the guy in the office is. You know what I mean? I know what you mean. So, all right. I don't think that's going anywhere, but at least it was a... It's an idea. Moving along. Checking in at...
Number 3.
Miami police officer has been suspended after drawing outrage for claiming at a public meeting that he identifies as a black man due to the one drop rule, which, of course, was the notion that if you had a single drop of blood, of black blood in you, you were black. And that was kind of an old racist way of segregating people and, you know, trying to keep people down. Now, he had previously, this guy had previously identified himself as a white Hispanic male. But the Miami Police Department then ran into a bit of a paperwork problem. And when the guy decided, you know, I'm no longer. No. Now I'm African-American. Now this is, wait till you hear this guy, because this is really something. Captain Javier Ortiz was named at the meeting of city commissioners of Miami on Friday as part of a complaint made by other officers that there is a disparity in the treatment of black officers in the department. So Ortiz was accused by other officers of having identified himself as black in order to get promotions based on lower exam scores. Just listen to this exchange.
I'm a black male. Yes, I am. And I am non-Hispanic. I was born in this country. That's how I feel.
I have a question for you.
Sure.
So you classify yourself today as a black man?
Yes.
When you applied for the police department, did you classify yourself as a black male or a white male at the time?
I think I put white male. I don't know if I, well, I know I put white male, but I don't know if I put Hispanic. I'm sorry?
You put down Hispanic male, didn't you?
Okay.
Okay.
I forgot what I was.
I don't think he did. Quite honestly, I don't think that's the issue. It gets better.
When did you have this with God moment that you were black? When did God tell you that?
Well, I learned that there's people in my family that are mixed and that are black.
I see.
Let's just let's not talk about the degree of blackness.
Oh, no, you're blacker than me. That's obvious. And if you know anything about the one drop rule, which started in the 20th century, which is what identifies and defines what a black male is, you would know that if you have one drop of black in you, you are considered black. So you're probably black too.
Can we do a DNA?
So you're probably black.
Oh my God.
Wow.
Wait, hold on. It's not over.
Nobody sent me here, nor did the city manager. I am my own man.
That's right, and you're your own black man, I know.
Yes. So now I'm being attacked.
Yeah.
Half of my family's Jewish. Probably didn't know that either.
Thank you. You're fine.
Thank you.
Mr. Ortiz claimed that he was a black. Now I hear Jewish black.
Oh,
I'm
hell.
Afraid maybe next month will be, you know, black Jewish woman. I don't know.
Why do you have to go there?
This is out of a Chappelle Show bit.
I know. I mean, first of all, everybody in this is a jag. I just want to point that out. Obviously, this guy's trying to take advantage of something or trying to make a grander sociological point about fairness. And it's really a mean-spirited way he's doing it. But then it's showing off the stupidity on the Miami council Because you got this guy now, what happened to him? Next thing you know, this Mexican comes in here and he says, blah, blah, and what if he's a woman? Oh, God.
When did you have this coming to with God moment that you were black? When did God tell you?
Well, I learned that there's people in my family that are mixed and that are black.
That's how it goes. All right. I like that. And the guy didn't want to say coming to Jesus at the meeting. He was worried about that. Otherwise, but he didn't have a problem saying, well, next time we come in here, maybe you'd be a woman. All right. And five. Oh, wait, no, hold on. Checking in at
number two.
Because number one is the cut of the week. Which that should be, by the way, but it happened too late on a Friday. We have a great cut of the week. Very inspirational. All right, let's see here. Number two, if there's a bucket list for things to do in Hollywood before you die, Jennifer Aniston just ticked two boxes less than a week. All right, she got her SAG Award for the morning show. That's the Screen Actors Guild, by the way. They should change that. She took the reins of her first talk show when she stepped in for Ellen DeGeneres. That just ran a couple hours ago here in Chicago. Now, she's not a stand-up comic. But she's pretty good, actually, and it certainly helped that her guests were some people that she's known for a long time. Does it help when Will Ferrell is your guest?
I feel sexy when...
I put on my referee outfit.
What part of your body are you the proudest of?
Oh, butt implants.
Yeah!
That was easy.
If you're flipping through the channels of, and one of your movies is on, mm-hmm. will you watch it?
100% yes.
Yeah! Who was your first celebrity crush, Will?
Oh, Joni on Happy Days.
Yeah!
Right?
Yes!
Right?
Well,
also, too, is it weird to say the mom on 8 is enough?
No!
There you go. There you go. See, that? See, we just cleansed the palate there. With some good old-fashioned, you know, down-home humor right there. After we had to learn about the one-drop rule. Coming up, the Top 5-5 clip of the week. But first, we got the news from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. Here's Kim Gordon. Top 5-5 continues. We're at number one, which is the Top 5 Cut of the Week.
Here come the Hawks, the mighty.
And it does involve our beloved Chicago Blackhawks. Hold on, let me to officially open this up. You got to do that.
Number one.
Tuesday night, United Center. Two amazingly emotional events. You know, this is the 10th anniversary of the 2010 Stanley Cup Championship by our beloved Blackhawks. And there was not a dry eye in the house for either of these two events. At least that's what I said. And I can guarantee you that Kevin was also crying during this. And Lauren actually didn't. I noticed. Lauren stayed completely... she kept her wits about her.
But I actually smiled.
Yeah. Well, see, now that... See, there was that. That happened. Kevin almost fell over when that happened. All right. Here's the thing. We started with Patrick Kane... The celebration for his 1,000th point, which had been scored on Sunday night but at the United Center, but was celebrated on Tuesday. And then Coach Quenneville, Coach Q, returned to the United Center for the first time since being relieved of his duties, let's put it that way, by the team a year and a half ago.
Here it is, and the United Center crowd rising to their feet. A standing ovation for the great Joel Quenneville, former Blackhawks head coach. We'll just let you listen. Video snippets of the Blackhawks in their Stanley Cup championships. Intermittent shots of Q at the bench.
Those are not boos.
Partisan crowd, they will never forget the achievements of Joel Quenneville.
Coach of the decade,
He's trying to hold it together behind the bench.
It was astounding, wasn't it? Because it just kept going.
Still gives me chills.
And it kept getting louder.
Yeah.
You know, normally it peaks out and you're kind of like, okay, this is everybody's going to start sitting down. And then they would show him again on the video board and people got even louder.
Then the officials were trying to start the game again because this was coming off of a TV commercial break. And they, you know, they go out to the dot. And the referee was just standing there by himself with the puck because the players were still around the benches, both Florida Panthers players and Blackhawks players. Because, right? I mean, you got to have both.
Roe was taking bets before the game on whether or not Q was going to cry. And I think it took every ounce of energy for Q to hold those tears in. He really
make me
was
a loser.
On the edge of losing it there, understandably. I think a lot of people were.
Oh, my. I mean, I did. It was so unbelievably emotional. And it was a beautiful moment for Patrick Kane, too, and his family who were there. They set up a red carpet for him, and he went out and he skated around a little bit just to take in the adulation of it. And that also coincides with, this week, the goal of the decade in the NHL. Uh-huh. The single goal of the decade was Patrick Kane's goal to win the first Stanley Cup championship of this era. Oh, this is the thousand. Oh, we're doing the thousandth goal? Oh, okay. All right. Hold on. I don't have this written down. Dear God. Here's the thousandth goal. The thousandth point that was actually scored on Sunday night.
Neil Pionk put it up the board. Picked off by Gustafson, left point. Put it down to Kane. Back on the net. He sent it in for Carpenter. He scores! And Patrick Kane has 1,000 NHL points! He'll get the second assist on this goal, and the Blackhawk players are all off the bench to skate down to the corner and mob Patrick Kane in the corner to the left of the Jets net. Congratulations, Patrick Kane! 1,000 career NHL points! What a moment for the Hawks!
That was a moment. That was a moment. And it was a beautiful... You had this sense on Tuesday night there, the entire sort of 10 years collapsed, you know, from the first Stanley Cup and then the 13 Cup and the 15 Cup, and that 10 years sort of collapsed in one moment for just a short period of time on Tuesday night before the Hawks in the second period went down 4-1. That was the only bummer of that night. But it was great to see and remember all of that stuff, at least.
Yeah. Kaner will be playing in the All-Star game tomorrow night.
Heard here on WGN Radio.
Heard right here on WGN Radio at 7.
All right. Okay. Are they cleaning out trash cans in back of you, Kevin? What are they doing here? You're at Sox Fest right now.
Right, and I'm in the media room where all the baseball reporters are typing out stories right now, so it's very quiet, but they are cleaning up the dinner that they served us here, which is quite lovely.
That's exactly what it sounds like. Like those big, like, plastic trash bags now that you see at, like, industrial places and museums.
It's exactly what you're hearing. The guy's taking out, like, a massive garbage can.
Right. They're, like, super thin, and they make a lot of noise.
Yep.
They sound like cymbals. And they're like, yeah, and there's a guy going, because it's at McCormick Place. So, hey, don't say anything to the guy. He's a union worker. He's got the thing. He's opening it up. I don't care. You might as well. I mean, if you were trying to save somebody's life, the guy would still be changing the liner in the trash can.
Right. Yeah. He's very focused. Did a great job cleaning up our mess.
Kevin's being very quiet now.
It's so awkward on broadcasting, and there's these baseball reporters who are just typing on their laptops.
Shh. Are they shushing you, too?
No, they're cool. I'm friends with all of them. Paul Sullivan's my favorite.
Lauren Lapka's got the traffic and the weather, and then this is something we've never done in the Canard Wagon before. We're going to try a non-alcoholic product. Thank God Kevin's not here for this. Lauren, news coming your way from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom right around the corner. Well, a little bit more than around the corner. The Canarbo Wagon is out. We're doing something completely different and antithetical to what the Canarbo Wagon has stood for these past 25 years. The Canarbo Wagon has stood for having a nice stiff drink at about 5 o'clock in the afternoon to get over whatever just happened during the last week. And more than ever, we could use one. And today, I think out of for my own personal safety and for the safety of those around me, we have brought in a non-alcoholic cocktail product. Now, this is really interesting. Gigi Sakey is with us. And explain what the concept is here, because this stuff smells like alcohol when you brought it in. What is it?
So Ritual Zero Proof is the first American-made line of alcohol alternatives. They're spirit alternatives. So you just replace one-to-one. You get all of the good of the alcohol except no actual alcohol or calories. So it's great for anybody who is, you know, you've got medical reasons, you're pregnant, or you're on call, you're on keto, or honestly, I'm in my 40s. I can't keep drinking like I used to. The pounds come on. Yeah. I've got kids.
Right.
You know.
Yeah, there are other issues that are apparently related to alcohol. I'm not sure what they are, but I've been told that they are. All right. So now what is fascinating about this is it does taste exactly like it. How do you get that? How do you make that taste like alcohol?
You know, people ask that, and it's an interesting process. It's not like we start with whiskey and then take the alcohol out. We build up. So it's a process that happened over 500 iterations. It started in our kitchen. My husband was taking a conscious break from drinking and found that he just missed the craft of a cocktail and sitting down with a good book and a cocktail. So he started in his kitchen.
By the way, I would like to point out I've never done that.
No?
I've sat down with a lot of things in a cocktail, but never a good book. So
never a good book.
Yeah, maybe if you're on this non-alcoholic version, maybe then I'd start reading. I don't know. But go ahead. All right. So you're building it using herbs and other flavorings.
So yes, they're all natural botanicals.
Oh.
500 iterations later, we've got these a gin alternative and a whiskey alternative, and they, you know, it's like a veggie burger. Are you going to be fooled that it's a cow? No. But it sits in the same place. It serves a purpose and gives you something far more sophisticated than a club soda.
Yes, right. That's true. Because the club soda, I mean, that does get old very quickly.
Yep.
Yeah. And the NA beers, too. They tend to, although those are pretty good at faking it, you know, but they're just still, what's the point? I don't love beer that much. I like what happens after I have a couple.
Right.
All right. So now the gin, this is really interesting because the gin and tonic tastes like a gin and tonic. So but gin is also really herbal. Right? Isn't that the
exactly.
whole point of it? It's
yes.
Juniper beans or juniper berries and all that.
Yes. I would say the gin was the less challenging of the two to come up with because you do have such an herbal place to start from.
Mm-hmm.
But it's made from all natural botanicals. You mix it with tonic. You're just replacing regular gin in your favorite cocktail with a ritual gin alternative. And you've got a very enjoyable semblance. But again, without, and I should jump
in
here.
Is there juniper in there?
Because there's juniper in there.
Yeah,
because
that's
exactly.
That's the base flavor, right? Of I have
exactly.
no idea. I wouldn't even, if you showed me a juniper berry, I would have no idea what it was. But it's
if you
start drinking gin, you go, oh, it's a juniper berry, and you know those are naturally poisonous to humans. And there's always somebody who got sick on gin when they were 18 and wants to tell you that story. But it's such a unique taste.
It is.
Yeah. And
is.
So, and you were able to replicate that. It's
yep.
pretty great.
Yep. Thank
All right.
you.
So now we're moving on to the whiskeys. Hold on. Now, this is, what am I going to have here? I'm going to have,
this is an old fashioned.
All right.
Yep.
So now, what are we trying to, is this supposed to be a bourbon?
This is a whiskey.
Just a whiskey.
Yep. So it's
okay. We're not saying which kind of a whiskey. It could be scotch or bourbon or
right.
rye or whatever that
yep,
is. Okay.
Exactly.
Okay.
So it's a whiskey alternative with some simple syrup and bitters. We use non-alcoholic bitters.
Oh, this is very, this is dead on.
Thank you.
Dead on. Wow.
And I should jump in here and say, like, we are drinkers. We are a company of drinkers. This came out of a love of alcohol.
You don't have to sell me on that.
No,
I understand.
It's true, though. That's at the core of it.
that you have a respect. Because that's true. That there, some of the non-alcoholic business, you know, the development of these kinds of alternatives have, come out of people who are disdainful of the demon alcohol. And listen,
yes.
there's a lot of downside to alcohol. I'm not trying to over-glamorize it, even though I've been doing that for a quarter century. There are drunk driving and all the other things that can happen. So it is certainly not a panacea, but if people want to maybe take a break for a while.
Yep.
January, right, is always the month. I was just,
exactly.
We were just with some friends this week where he said to me, I'm not drinking in January. And it was weird to be with him and he wasn't drinking. And then he said to me, I'll see you February 1st. So, yeah, that's I get how people feel about this, but it's a great, and also in case, like you said, if people are pregnant or if they're the designated driver at a party, this is a good alternative.
Yep.
All right, and where do you get the product?
We have our own website, and we are for sale locally at Binny's.
Oh.
We are also for sale on Amazon, and we are very quickly getting into stores all over the country.
So what you look for here is Ritual Zero Proof is the name of the brand, right? And you'll see it right on the bottle. And then you got the gin alternative. You've got a whiskey alternative.
Indeed.
And is there anything else, or are those the two?
Not right now, but in the spring we've got a tequila alternative coming out that we are particularly excited about.
Oh. Are you burning wood in your kitchen right now trying to figure out how to get that taste?
There's nothing left of my kitchen. It's all burned down.
Because that's really what basically tequila is just like, it's like a 3 days after a house fire is what it tastes like.
Right. And yet, who doesn't love a good margarita?
I know. That's the thing. I've always wondered this about alcohol. Who started drinking it and thought it was good, right? Maybe they were watching the birds get drunk on the berries or something, and there must be something there. Let's try the berries. And then
you don't start out loving the taste.
No.
You start out loving the effect.
No, exactly.
And then grow to appreciate the taste.
And your parents, too, they were like, oh, wait, you know, all right, fine. You want a drink? Try this. And then, you know, you'd take a drink of it and you'd throw up or whatever it was because the taste was just so intense. And now you could actually train them up on your stuff right here. I like this.
But we're not saying you should feed it to your kids. I mean, you could.
It's not the right thing to do. It's bad parenting.
Honestly, I'll say the best use of it, one of the best uses of it is it's the perfect third cocktail. You know, I'm with you. I love coming home. I'm finished with work. I'm put my daughter down. And I just want to have that sigh, that transition into my time, my adult time, and I want my cocktail.
So you don't
in my
wake
hand.
Up as so if your third cocktail, even your second cocktail, whatever it is, you just don't like you don't feel bad when you wake up.
Exactly,
in the morning.
You can still enjoy a good cocktail, and then you kind of like downslope a little bit and have a Ritual cocktail. It gives you more control.
That's a cool name, Ritual Zero Proof, because it is the ritual of it.
It is
very much, you know, they say that about cigarettes too. That's the, you know, it's the oral fixation,
right.
but having a cocktail in your hand or just having that cold glass in your hand becomes part. It's all part of the mindset. It's all part of the physicality of it. And then it's part of the, you know, again, not part of the upside, sometimes part of the downside. So you're turning the downside into the upside. I appreciate that. And you probably, you might be cutting down on people fighting. That might be good too. All right. Ritual Zero Proof. You can find it at Binny's. There's two flavors available now. You got your gin and you got your whiskey. Soon, this spring, you will find tequila there. Vodka, kind of hard because vodka doesn't have a ton of taste, but it's got some burn to it.
So exactly.
You just find something else that burns. That's how you do it.
Yep.
All right. Well, thank you so much for being here, and we really appreciate it. Gigi Sakey from Ritual Zero Proof. RitualZeroProof.com if you want to find it. We got news from Northwestern Medicine Newsroom coming your way in
2020 is here. This is the year you're going to replace that roof, install new windows, maybe even remodel the bathroom. If you need some advice on which way to go, I'm your buddy, Lou Manfredini. Call me Saturday mornings from 7 to 10 a.m. on House Smarts Radio right here.
Lou's on 720 WGN. Sponsored by Ace, the helpful place.
Rokan Show right here, 720 WGN. Our beloved Kevin Powell is out at Sox Fest right now in McCormick Place, where they were just cleaning up dinner, and we were listening to them do that. And we've got Lauren Lapka, of course, in continuing on with her traffic and weather ritual on a Friday afternoon as all hell has broken loose here because it's foggy. It's kind of, we're not exactly sure what it's doing in the precip world. Is it rainy? Is it freezing rain? Is it snow? It's about to turn to snow. So it is a mess. One of our Chicago heroes has stepped into the studio, though, to be with us. And so we welcome him as we always do. I've seen this man fight. I've seen this man be a part of so many super cool things. So, you've done so many things, Mike Lee, that have brought great honor and respect to the city and to remembering how to do the right thing. And I always appreciate what you've done you know, throughout your boxing career and throughout your just going out and doing the right thing career.
Thank you.
Which is hard enough. Yeah, that's not an easy thing to do because people don't always do the right, especially professional athletes, don't always do the right thing.
Yeah. Well, listen, I punch people in the face for a living, so I feel like, you know, with karma, I got to do some right, some good out there as well.
Yeah. So Mike Lee is a Chicago kid, and you Golden Gloves champ right here in Chicago. And you've been one of the best ambassadors for boxing this town has ever seen that's come out of here. And you're right now you're taking a little bit of time off, and we'll just have to see where this goes, right?
Yeah, I mean, I've had a long, incredible career, and Chicago's been phenomenal to me. I've fought here so many times on ESPN and HBO cards, and it's been incredible to come back home and have big fights here.
Yeah.
22 fights in total. I don't think it's over yet, but my last big fight, I just fought for a world title at the MGM Grand. That was a dream come true. I mean, it was my first loss, so I didn't get the outcome I wanted, and there's a lot of things I would have done differently, but at the end of the day, that's a dream I've had since I was 8 years old. To walk through that tunnel in front of thousands of people and a million on TV and put it all on the line, all the chips on the line, and go for it. And yeah, I got knocked down, and I ended up getting knocked out, but I didn't quit. And every single time I got back up. And so at the end of the day, I can know that, you know, I go to bed at night knowing I gave everything I had, and I'm not done. And it'll take more to knock me out, so to speak.
That's very interesting. We were all at the Allstate, what was that, a year and a half ago, I think it is now. And it, you know, the one thing about boxing is that Chicago used to be an epicenter for boxing and for televised boxing, and it sort of left this town. Las Vegas, of course, you know, was a big thing, and then internationally you get these fights. But it's just fun when you know, you and your organization were able to bring this stuff right back here, whether it was for CBS or ESPN, like you said.
Yeah, and we've had awesome, not only the Chicago community, but my alma mater, Notre Dame, which obviously there's a ton of Notre Dame alum.
Oh, I hadn't heard that. You went to Notre Dame? That never came up in an interview. It only like Harvard.
There it is.
You know, it always gets dropped. I've noticed the Notre Dame thing always. It takes about somewhere. With Harvard, it takes 30 seconds.
Right.
But Notre Dame is about 3 minutes.
I need to back away from that. Yeah. Oh, thank you. I appreciate that. That's really all I was looking for, Ro, was just a congratulations and then no more talk about Notre Dame. Yeah. So that community has been phenomenal and come out. You mentioned the Allstate Arena fight. That was incredible. That was for the junior world title. A sloppy fight, but I broke my rib in the second round of that fight and had to go 8 more rounds. So that was one of the most painful experiences of my life.
I remember you coming off and a bunch of us were gathered around you, and we couldn't figure it out because you were really favoring.
Yeah.
And it was one of those moments where like, what is happening here? And the fact that you actually had a broken rib, and you went to the hospital that night, didn't you?
I was in the hospital till 4 a.m., and that took about 3 months to heal. I had to do some PRP and stem cells on it. But the one thing I learned from that fight is, oh, my God, is adrenaline an incredible force, because I somehow got 8 more rounds through that fight.
Yeah.
And I remember getting back to the dressing room, and I basically collapsed in pain, and
yeah,
they rushed me to the hospital. So not a fun night, but I got the belt, and it's hanging up in my place right now, and I guess that's all that matters. I went to Notre Dame.
Yeah, you just dropped. That's what I was looking for. That's Mike Lee.
Go
right
Irish,
there.
Baby.
There
go
you
Irish.
Go. All right, let's talk about this. I see Dave Rutherford is here. The you're doing this smoker, second annual Christensen Boxing Smoker in support of those who serve, and that is coming your way on Saturday night. That's tomorrow night, right? From 6 to 11 o'clock at the Palmer House Hilton. That's one of our fine sponsors. And it's the event is in honor of U.S. Navy SEAL Eric Christensen, who was killed in an operation that became the Lone Survivor book, right?
Operation Red Wings.
Yes. Yep. Yeah. And so the money that will be raised tomorrow night will endow a scholarship to support a scholarship for children of Chicago police and fire and military personnel. So that's an amazing thing. See, this is what I'm talking about. He does the right thing. Breaks his rib, fights eight more rounds, waits 3 minutes to mention Notre Dame. The man is always doing the right thing right here.
Well, I mean, we walked in the met each other officially for the first time when we just came to the building here, and he says, "Hi, I'm Mike Lee. I went to Notre Dame." And I was just like, "Are you kidding me?
Okay, here
Are
we
you
go.
Kidding me?
Here we go."
You know,
as a Penn Stater, I have to put it in its place. You know,
didn't you go to grad school there too? At Notre Dame?
No, I didn't. I would have mentioned that twice if
yeah,
I did.
Yeah, I thought so. Double domers always do. All right, hold on one second. We'll be right back with Mike Lee, who, by the way, I just learned went to Notre Dame. But first, here is Lauren Lapka, whose sister went to Notre Dame, by the way. We'd like to mention that.
Very true.
Hey, hey. Right. So she's got the traffic and the weather. All right. We have Mike Lee. He's boxing in Chicago royalty right here in the studio with us. And he and Dave Rutherford are doing this second annual Christensen Boxing Smoker in support of those who serve. Now, explain, gentlemen, a little bit about what the evening is going to be like. It's tomorrow night, and it's going to be at the Palmer House Hilton. And how much are tickets, and what are people going to see?
Well, I mean, this is one of the most unique charity events out there. And, you know, Eric's parents have been raising money for scholarships for over 14 years.
Eric Christensen.
Eric Christensen's parents, whose father was a former admiral in the Navy, amazing human being. And now they want to help firefighters and police officers, and they want to provide scholarships locally for kids. And so what better way than to get an exciting night where people are willing to donate, but to have this smoker where, you know, you bring Navy boxing team in to go against the Chicago Golden Gloves. And it's one of those things where the energy's palpable in the room, and at the same time it's an event that it captures your attention, and for a cause that is bar none something that is transformative for some young kid's life. I mean, imagine giving the money to a young boy or girl who, and money comes in name of Eric Christensen, you know, right. A guy who is pure legend in our community.
Fallen American hero.
Right? I mean, the fact that he jumped on that helicopter to go save Marcus Luttrell and Mike Murphy and Matt Axelson and Danny Dietz. With
the lone survivor story.
Right, exactly. Yeah. To go out there himself, where he could have just stayed home, that's not the kind of guy he was. So imagine the opportunity for a young person to be able to give him this scholarship and to carry the legacy of Eric Christensen on, right, Mike?
Yeah, and I was at the event last year. It was incredible. It was at the Palmer House and Black Tie, you know, event where people are watching some great amateur fights, raising some incredible money. And, you know, it's incredible this year that we have David Rutherford, who's a SEAL team legend himself and understands first and foremost the sacrifice that our men and women make, basically, so that people like me can chase our dreams, you know, let's be honest. And so for that, I'm extremely grateful, and I think that you know, him emceeing the event and obviously him being so tied into the SEAL community is incredible that we can all galvanize around this kind of cause where we're going to help the children of first responders, the children of Chicago Fire Department, the children of military personnel with the scholarship fund. So, I mean, people getting punched in the face and raising money for charity.
That's a perfect
match.
Let's
go. Win-win.
Ding, ding.
Let me just say that I've seen David Rutherford MC before at the Lone Survivor Foundation.
Get out of here.
I did. Right next door to where we are right
here. At the Radisson right there. You were there.
I was there.
Oh, my.
And all I want to say is he walked the perimeter of the... I don't know if it walked, you patrolled the perimeter of the dance floor before the event started. And I've never, and everybody like sort of stopped at this. And, you know, it's a bunch of Navy SEALs and people who, you know, want to help the families. And this was actually the Mark Luttrell Foundation. It's a little different thing, but it's that actually sets up, an opportunity for families of returning Navy SEALs special warfare personnel who come back, who have seen, you know, the worst of the worst. And they're trained to be vigilant 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And often that doesn't sort of fit well into the family lifestyle when they immediately return. And so they set up these retreats and basically help these families kind of reconnect in a family way. And it's an amazing organization. But this dude, he was up there, you know, just marching around the corner by himself around the perimeter of the dance floor. And everybody's like, who is that dude? And then all of a sudden he becomes the MC, and it was an amazing night. So people going there tomorrow are going to have a great time.
Yeah. I mean, when you think about it, when you can bring together this much energy in a room, right? And that's the greatest challenge that we have in life, is to somehow cultivate enough energy that moves people to act, right? What cultivates Mike to get in the ring over and over and over? And it's this commitment to excellence. And the Christensens represent that. That family is committed to excellence. So when you can combine, like Mike was saying, all in one space, man, it's transformative. And one of the things that I just really want to touch on real quickly is so often is people don't really recognize that the children of first responders, the children of firefighters and police officers, in particular in Chicago, man. I mean, think about the bringing home what these guys have to, men and women have to face day in and day out, and then somehow try and provide for their children better opportunities for them, right? So this is one of those representations to be able to bring an opportunity like that to these kids that have seen the challenges that their parents face.
No question about it. I'm on the board of the Police Memorial Foundation here, and we talk about it a lot. As a matter of fact, we just started delivering our second generation of tactical vests to police officers.
That's so cool.
We buy them for them because they otherwise have to buy them for themselves, which doesn't seem fair to me, but that's why we did this and we started doing this. Now, a new batch of 980 vests are being released this year to these officers. So I'm very proud of the organization. I'm very proud of what we do at the Memorial Foundation. But what you just brought up is something that's really important, which is the firefighters. They don't get as much attention in terms of what they go through. So you've got responding firefighter EMTs and then paramedics. The reason that the murder rate in Chicago has been dropping is in large part due to the work of those men and women. Because when somebody gets shot in this town, they have a very good chance of survival.
Oh, I'll tell you what. When I was going through, I'm a combat medic, right? And when I was going through our training, I got an opportunity to live and work in New York City and the ambulances and hospitals there. And, you know, for a community of 8 million people, man, and they only had something like 1,200 paramedics on call. But the quality, the professionalism and the dedication for these people, because you see it day in and day out. You like we were talking about that pain, right? The psychological pain day in and day out. So to be able in some way, shape or form to give them the opportunity to give their children a leg up in this world, that is a championship event.
Yeah, absolutely. David Rutherford is with us. And Mike Lee, Chicago's very own Mike Lee, 21-1 as a professional boxer, one of the great boxers ever to come out of this town. And you know, this town has been known for some boxers. I'm not sure if you're familiar with that.
I've heard, yeah.
So, and we don't know where this goes in terms of your career, because I thought you had retired. You have not retired. And we'll see what happens here.
Yeah, we'll see. We're negotiating something really big, possibly in the summer. For this summer in Chicago.
I do love it when you bring it back here. How many times have you fought in Chicago?
We gotta bring it back
for big national television,
especially in the summer. Yeah. You know, probably about 5-6 fights now.
Yeah.
Wow.
I wish I could do it more. You know, it's always up to the promoter. I've done a lot in Vegas and kind of all over now, but honestly, I'm not just saying this. There's something about Chicago. I come back home and the energy. I mean, it's a great sports town, period. You know what I mean? It's one of the best sports towns in the country. So
yes.
I love, you know,
and
I thrive
support,
off it.
And supports our very own, right?
Absolutely.
I mean, there's no question about that.
Yeah.
And you know, you're it right now. I mean, actually, there's a bunch of young fighters. You know, there's always a number of young fighters that are coming out of Chicago that are going up through the ranks. But the boxing world has changed so dramatically because you got MMA and all the rest of that stuff that is kind of it's taking younger fighter kids who'd want to do this, and it's pushing them toward that as opposed to the sweet science of boxing.
Yeah.
And I love boxing. I'm not a big fan of the MMA. I don't really get guys get on the ground. Then they try to strangle each other with their legs. It's like two insects. I don't know what to do with it. and I think the whole Conor McGregor thing taught us a little something about the differential between what a boxer is and a MMA fighter is. So
it's two different sports.
It is
radically
totally
different.
It really
radically
is.
Different. And I really respect what you guys did. Always respected boxing because it's the key to boxing is to not get hit. Right? Isn't
Amen.
That? Isn't that the? That's what you. That's what you're really trying to do. It's not necessarily to land every punch, but it's just to avoid getting hit.
That's it. I mean, I love when I meet people and I say, you know, I'm a boxer. They're like, oh, you don't look like a boxer. And to me, I'm like, well, that's a compliment. It looks like I don't get punched in the face for the past 10 years. So, and the greatest fighters who ever lived, you know, are guys that learned how to hit but don't get hit.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
And so you see that with the two different sports. But even tomorrow night, you've got Golden Glove fighters. I mean, the guys that are in those Golden Glove tournaments end up becoming champions. You know, that's Golden Gloves is an incredible breeding ground for guys to turn pro and then take off. So that's why I'm excited about, you know, tomorrow night, too, is kind of checking out some of that Chicago talent.
And they're going to want to talk and meet you. And
oh, my God. Know, can you wait for that? Yes. All these kids that are showing up to see a legend,
to see Mike Lee. Yes, a legend. That's, you know, I don't want to get to, I've known him since he was a kid. I don't want to call him a legend.
Why not?
Because I want him to retire. Then I'll call him a legend.
No, let him be a legend now. He's earned it.
I just don't want, I'm going to be wearing a suit. So don't think I'm fighting tomorrow night. If I'm fighting tomorrow night, something went very wrong.
It's the Boxing Smoker tonight. The second annual Christensen Boxing Smoker. It is at the Palmer House Hilton. Starts at 6 o'clock. Goes till, well, God knows when it goes till. I'm sure it'll spill into the bar before it's all said and done. You got to see. If you're not there, just to see our friend Mike Lee get up there and inspire the folks. This is the best MC working in America right now. Dave Rutherford.
From your lips.
I do a lot of these things. I want to do that night.
Maybe I can do Mike's next big fight.
Let's do it.
I'll kick Michael Buffer out. You're in.
Yeah. Navy SEAL medic, right?
Yeah.
So thank you for your service,
thank
sir.
You.
And this money goes, again, for scholarships for the children of firefighters and police officers, first responders in the Chicago, and military personnel in the Chicago area.
And people can go to the Facebook page, which is called Christensen Smoker.
That's with a K, by the way.
With a K, yeah. And they can make donations to support. And listen, every dollar helps us. We don't care where you come in. Every dollar is going towards a young person's future.
And this is a black tie event tomorrow? Or is it, I mean, you're going to be in a tux.
Yeah,
Michael Buffer.
I mean, it's business formal, maybe
biz casual. You're not getting kicked out, but just look sharp.
Okay, I get it.
Don't embarrass me.
And do we know how much the tickets are? Can we say?
I don't know that. As a matter of fact, I know there's a tiered level in terms of we have corporate sponsored tables. We've got around. You can come in by the bar and pay. I think that's like $350 or something like that. So,
yeah, just to walk in and be a part of the event, I think is relatively inexpensive versus you know, having a full on table or anything.
Got it. Yeah. All right. Well, gentlemen, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Love you, Mike Lee. I want the best for you. I want you to retire. Sir, I want to call you a legend. And unless the money's really great in this next fight. And Dave, thank you so much for being with us. And
God
thanks for your service.
You.
Not just all your service you did in the military, but what you do now. It's
thank
amazing
you,
stuff. All right, let's check in with Kim Gordon. Oh, actually, no. Vic Vaughn, right? He's got the WGN News right now. Did I just look up there and see that? I think I did. Ro Khan Show right here on 720 WGN. Kevin Powell, as you just heard, is at Sox Fest, where they're festing the Sox right now.
Big time fest.
This is tonight and tomorrow, right?
Correct.
It ends tomorrow night with a big, goes out with a very large ceremony, I would imagine.
Yes, it'll be a very eventful day here at McCormick Place. Joe Brand will be here all morning and afternoon giving you updates from Sox Fest as well. So currently it's Rick Hahn and Ricky Renteria holding their White Sox town hall, which is always fun because they field questions from diehard fans.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. things are positive this year, fortunately. They're in a good spot, obviously, moving forward. There were some injury updates as well. Dallas Keuchel, by far, appears to be the most popular in terms of the photo autograph session. His line is like basically zigzagging throughout the entire floor of the convention. So I don't think everybody's going to actually get a chance because it would take all night for him to meet with the fans. But obviously a lot of buzz with the Keuchel signing. And one of my favorite things they do at Sox Fest is they call it the garage sale area, which is like a bunch of random stuff. Like you can buy game worn pants from from a player for like $5.
Oh, I got it. We were there last year. People were just, and we tried to get in and they threw us out,
right?
Because they said we weren't fans enough because we were wearing media credentials.
Yeah, he's like, okay, Mr. Media Guy, keep moving.
I love
this
that.
Is for fans only.
Yep.
So we had slim pickings last year, but I just walked through. There's
did you take off your media credential and pretend you're a fan?
I was like, I mean, you are a fan. I'm like, man, last year they were kind of sticklers about it, but I was able to sneak my way into the garage sale area. Did spot some Star Wars bobbleheads that have Lauren Lapka's name written all over it, so I think I got to stop back up there. It's a little Chewbacca White Sox mashup situation. Right up her alley.
Yeah, always... definitely have room right next to my Stormtrooper. It'll be perfect.
Yeah.
Your White Sox Stormtrooper.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. We just want to make sure we got the right Stormtrooper there.
I got a lot of different versions of Stormtroopers.
White Sox Star Wars mashups is like perfect for Lauren Lapka.
Yeah, doesn't get any better.
You can buy baseball bats from there, so it's just a good vibe. The place is absolutely jam-packed. It was sold out, and you can feel the buzz from fans, for sure.
So, Would you say that, obviously, as you mentioned, Dallas Keuchel is the guy that everybody's lining up to take pictures of, but yeah. There's a buzz in the room, as you mentioned, when Luis Robert walked in. He's undoubtedly going to be your center field starter for this season. He was in AAA. He's got kind of the yellow, orange, flat top thing going on for his hair. He's wearing a white suit because he's from Cuba. From Cuba can get away with an all white suit.
Yeah,
and a lot of people are predicting that he's not only just be a gigantic star in Major League Baseball, but he's got all the skills to be one of the best ever.
Yeah, the way Rick Hahn described him today, he said, quote, "It's like the Under Armour mannequin came to life and started playing baseball." The guy is chiseled. He's absolutely jacked. He looks like he can play strong safety for the Bears. Yeah, between him and Yoan Moncada, I think they've won the fashion contest so far. They are very photogenic fans. And Tim Anderson, too. You know, if you're going to talk about the face of the franchise, I don't know if there's one individual player because there are so many young rising players on this team. But Tim Anderson really is a guy that's talked about on a national level, not just locally. So you've seen a lot of love for Tim Anderson. I've seen a ton of Tim Anderson jerseys. They have like a giant bobblehead Tim Anderson photo opportunity where I saw a line of people just for that alone. So I think if there is a guy you want to point to and say he's the face of the franchise, I think it's Tim Anderson. And I think a lot of younger fans, kids out there, really, he's appealing to them. He's fun. He's like a big-time, you know, Showtime type player. So, yeah, a ton of Tim Anderson jerseys around the convention.
Do you get the sense?
Is he your guy as well, Ro? I can't remember if he's.
Yeah, I mean, Tim Anderson's my guy. He was my guy season one. I was saying, yeah, this is a guy. I was talking to Steve Stone about him constantly on the show, and Steve used to be our White Sox analyst.
Yeah.
And I would bring up Tim Anderson every time, and he would just ignore me and move on. And two seasons ago, and then Tim Anderson became certainly he was the centerpiece of last year's team, right? And on in the field and at bat. So
yeah,
you gotta give them a ton of credit. This year though, they are just stacked with players. They're stacked with offense. And now you've got some defensive problems from last year solved, fixed. And Yoan Moncada still's got beautiful eyes. So what are you gonna do?
Here's my bold prediction: Yoan Moncada, right there in the thick of things when it comes to MVP voting at the end of the year.
Wow.
There's my bold prediction for you. People are on the hot takes, bro. There's my hot take for the night.
Nick Madrigal, is he there?
He is, yes.
He's probably going to be in the minors at the beginning, but eventually going to be your starting second baseman, I would guess.
For the future, really.
Yeah.
Long time.
Okay. All right. Lauri Garcia there, he's my guy.
He is here.
How about James McCann? I want to say he's my guy, but then Lauren gets mad at me and says, no, that was her guy.
Yeah. Actually haven't seen James McCann.
You can't have the whole team, bro.
We were at games last year, and James McCann hit a home run. I go, yeah, that's my guy. And she gets so mad at me. No! He's my favorite player. So, all right. Well, great. Thank you. Thank you, Kevin, for being out there. Thank you for making sure that we are properly represented and we're totally covered out there at the White Sox Fest. Sox Fest happening this weekend. Well, tonight and tomorrow.
Yeah.
At McCormick Place.
Yep.
All right. Thank you, sir.
You good.
All right. Now he can relax. He can start doing whatever it is that he's going to do. And I think I know what that is. Lauren's got the traffic and the weather right now. Yeah, it's the Rokon Show right here in 720 WGN. You know, our old friend Justin Kaufman stepped into the studio.
I'll take that.
And I want to say something to you, Justin, because this is important.
I appreciate it. Before you even say it, I appreciate it.
Yeah. No, you won't, actually. Justin, you've been for the last 18 months, you've been doing this Best Movies of Chicago.
It feels like it, doesn't it? It really does.
The best Chicago-based movies of all time.
Begrudgingly, almost to the end.
It's almost at the end, yes. Ugh. And I applaud that. Now, it was like 6 months ago, Richard Roper and I were on to debate what was what's better, Cooley High or whatever.
The first one, I believe, was December 10th. So that gives you an idea. And we took off Christmas as well. So we're still within a month and a half. That's why I like to keep it inside. The goal was to be done with this thing by January 31st, and we will be. The ultimate Chicago movie cage match. It just got hot right away. And the first one, everyone got excited about it. And they're like, who's the best? We're like, well, it's going to take a month. It's taking a little bit longer.
Okay. Now, all right. Tonight, you're slimming it down to the final two.
The final four.
This is the AFC-NFC championship. Now you get your NFC championship.
That's right. So last night we had our first of the final four. It was the Blues Brothers versus Untouchables.
Mm-hmm. Blues Brothers
and the
cream.
Blues Brothers crushed them.
Yeah.
There were some good arguments for the Untouchables. Uh-huh. And a lot of it had to do with just, remember, the premise of the segment is not just necessarily the best movie, but the best Chicago movie. And The Untouchables, many agreed, was the better movie. It was more of a film than the Blues Brothers. But if you're really going to pick a Chicago movie, Blues Brothers moved on. Tonight, same arguments, but a little bit tougher. The second half, which is probably the close, this will be the one that's the toughest across the board.
Yeah.
Is Ferris Bueller's Day Off, which is such a classic and people love it.
Yes.
Versus The Fugitive, the Harrison Ford, Tommy Lee Jones vehicle, which people love that movie, man. That is an action movie that is very Chicago.
I know. I'm just going to tell you what's going to happen. Because I got creamed by Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
But you put up a good fight.
Versus Cooley. Yeah, but I got creamed anyway. I made my most impassioned argument about anything I've ever argued about in my life.
You did.
Justin. I somehow still lost 80-20.
Right.
But I got 20.
People love Ferris Bueller.
Right. I was like the Tony Preckwinkle of your contest.
You carried your house.
Yes. That's all I did. Right.
That's all you did.
I lost every award.
And your family members were like, all right, maybe. Yeah, I didn't even
carry that.
Yeah, so I love this because we're going to be doing it at 8 o'clock tonight, and this is the one we've been waiting for. We did a bracket, so if you're new to this, it's 64 films we started with, and each one, just like an NCAA tournament,
yes,
like you'll see coming up here.
It's a lot,
and we did the first two rounds just internally with the staff.
And this is the best movies about or shot in Chicago.
Yep, the best Chicago movies of all time. And there have been some great titles and some unbelievable stuff, and people have taken such an interest in, you know, making sure their favorite movie is represented. And we have, I think it's been very thorough, and we've gotten to the point where, you know, I have the brackets and the brackets that the staff did, and Ferris Bueller shows up in the final four. Blues Brothers shows up in the final four in almost every one of them. There's some haters, like Nick DiGilio hates Ferris Bueller. And so you look, the first, I think it was up against Hardball in the first round, the Keanu Reeves film, Hardball.
Mm-hmm.
And
never heard of it.
Hardball beat Ferris Bueller in Nick's bracket.
Yeah, of course.
So to give you an idea.
So
you either have a hatred for the film or it goes to the final four.
All right. So here's the deal.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be Ferris Bueller and Blues Brothers. I'm going to tell you that right now.
That.
I'm making the prediction. I'm making the prediction right now. I'm calling it.
Yep.
Because I got to call. Kansas City's going to win the Super Bowl too. But that's, you know,
you're one of these news pundits that likes to call things before.
I'm calling it.
Yeah.
Right. Exactly. Biden's going to win the Democratic primary. I'm calling it right now. So that's going to be those are going to be your two
right
there, and then it's really going to come down. It's tough that I, you know, and that's next week.
That's going to be next week. Yeah.
Next week, next Friday.
I think it'll
night?
Be next Friday night or next Thursday night. I'll figure out that time. Yeah.
Okay. You're working on it.
But I haven't had enough time to figure this out.
You're wondering when are you going to get that Cuckoo Kamunga interview that you're working on.
Yeah, the
mute
right.
Guy,
mute poet.
The mute poet.
The mute poet can either do Tuesday or Thursday, and it's a morning thing. When he's coming in, there's a lot going on, so I got to figure it out.
Yes. I love that guy. He's great on the radio. He's a mute poet. All right. So I between those two, I got to go with Blues Brothers.
You think Blues Brothers are Ferris, huh?
Yeah.
I just watched Ferris Bueller the other day.
It's very good.
It's very good. It holds up. There are some that say it's not a complete movie, but it's a really... A great,
just like, but you know what? I was
film.
Maybe I misunderstood the premise of this.
How could you?
For you, because it's complicated.
At this point, how could you? Right?
But I think what happened here, what had happened was that this was. I thought it was like, how do you feel as a Chicagoan when you see these movies? That's the way I approached it.
But the beauty of it, Ro, is that we were trying to be interpretive. You could. There were some movies that a great example, The Dark Knight. People love that movie. They think that's a Chicago movie. It is. It made it to the Sweet 16. It lost in the Sweet 16 because it is set in Gotham City.
Right.
And it gives you the sight. So it could go by your feeling of how you feel when you're in there. And a lot of people are using that for The Fugitive.
Yeah.
They're saying that is a real Chicago film. That's how Chicago really is. And there's a great argument made by Rachel Claff. She'll make it again tonight that the Chicago in The Fugitive is a Chicago that helps Dr. Richard Kimball. It's a Chicago that is a open city that he's able to use to his advantage to solve the mystery.
Mm-hmm.
There are different Chicagos in all these films. The Chicago in Ferris Bueller, a much different Chicago.
Yes.
That's like he's got a day off. What's he going to do with the day off? He's going to go have fun in the best city in the world.
Right. And then go back to the North Shore.
Then they go back.
it's all over. Right. And as a city person, I'm offended by that. But I, you know what is interesting? The neighborhoods that they show in The Fugitive mm-hmm. are they shot it really on the streets here. They chose very great Chicago-esque neighborhoods the bungalows, and it sells what it's like to be on an average street.
The county hospital is actually the Cook County Hospital. Yeah. The facade of it.
You could shoot in that in Cook County Hospital back in the day because there was no medicine being performed, so it was okay. Now it's better.
In The Fugitive, you got some stars in that film. You've got a young Jane Lynch. Isn't that film? She's a Dr. Richard Kimball's friend in the mm-hmm. and Julianne Moore plays an ER nurse or doctor in The Fugitive.
Oh,
yeah, like one of her first.
I have to go back and look at them.
Yeah, I'm just saying, like that. That's how. There's also a lot of that. There's some really great. I don't know. I'm torn. I like both films.
Yeah, I do want to say that one of the ones that eluded us was the. It's good to know the title's like slip out of your head. It's one of those, been one of those weeks, but it's the one about the guy who's really the murderer and he's got the lawyer played by Richard Gere. And the somebody will help me with this right now. Pete, you're a producer. What's the name of that movie? Richard Gere
being
Primal Fear.
Primal Fear. That was a Chicago movie.
Yes, that's a Chicago shot movie, and our own legal analyst, Mike Monaco, unpaid position. Was the technical advisor on that film.
Really?
Richard Gere basically is playing Mike Monaco in that film.
So essentially, Mike would say, this is how to dress sharply.
Yes.
Mike's one of the most sharp-dressed men I've ever seen.
You walk into the courtroom like a Roman emperor, but then when you address the judge, you are a Roman slave. That is the way you do it.
Wow,
and Richard Gere handled it that way. Anyway, all right, well, good luck tonight. It's going to be fun.
I'm telling you,
Blues Brothers should win the whole thing. That is my prediction to win the whole deal.
I don't know about that.
We'll see,
though.
All right. Anything else going on in the program tonight?
We'll talk about my two favorite things, storytelling and karaoke. There's a show in Chicago that's putting them together, and I love it. You tell the story of what this song means to you, and then you perform it. How great is that?
Oh, God, I hate both those things.
That's the best thing ever.
That's the worst thing since Cuckoo Kamonga, the mute poet.
I'm looking during, to be at Shuba's next time.
During
Sunday.
Lit Fest.
I'm looking forward to it. I want to do it. I want to go up there and do that.
What would you sing?
I think I would probably do the new Harry Styles joint.
What this particular number means to me. You could be like Judy Garland.
Yeah.
You know, sort of drunken on pills and not being able to really fully speak to the audience.
Sure.
Yeah.
Maybe a poison. Every rose has its thorn. Something like that.
Yeah. Oh, you know, God. All right.
Sweet Home by Motley Crue. Something like that.
You're the best, Justin Kaufman. Thank you very much.
Thanks, bro.
Yeah, you're welcome. All right, we got Justin Kaufman's show is coming your way after Vic Vaughn from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom in 2 minutes.
Radio Chicago, this is AM 720. WGN.
All right, it's the Rokan Show, calling it quits for another week. We'll be back here Monday at 3 o'clock. Justin Kaufman is coming your way next. He's got a lot of things to say, a lot of things to do. It is the end of the...
Pay attention to the rain tonight. It's going into snow.
Yeah, it's
going to
be...
coronavirus. We got things to do tonight.
Yeah, the coronavirus too.
Yeah.
Yes. As a matter of fact, you should play the tape we have of interviewing the health commissioner of Illinois on that.
Yeah, I love it.
Yes.
We'll look into it.
I could use the plug. Thank you, Justin.
Have a good weekend.